Hello!
Hey guys, it's Arden Cho.
This is Seth Gilliam.
My name is Kiahu Kuhuanui.
Hey you guys, this is Melissa Ponzio.
I'm Lyndon Ashby.
Hey, it's Ronnie Adams.
This is Tyler Posey, and you are listening to Not Another.
Not Another.
Not Another.
This is Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast.
Yes, it is!
Oh.
Ha-ha!
This is Jeff Davis, and you're listening to Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast.
Hello everyone, welcome to episode 75 of Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast. We're recording this week about the episode Weaponized that just aired, and Karen and I have a special guest with us this week. So everyone can say hello to Karen. Hi Karen.
Hi.
Hi. And everyone can say hello to Alyssa Clark. Hello Alyssa.
Hello.
Hi. Alyssa, as you may or may not know, has been a guest on our show before from when we were lucky enough to visit the Teen Wolf set. She's one of the writers on the show, one of the current writing team, and this episode has her name stuck on the top of it. So that's about all for in terms of you, right, Alyssa?
Yep, that pretty much sums up my entire life right there. Good job.
Cool. Yeah, so Alyssa's actually taking a pretty brave leap, and instead of coming on with us for a standard interview where we just sort of are really nice and say really nice things and, you know, ask questions that we want to know the answers to, she's actually going to sit with us through our entire episode recap as per we usually do and participate, which, what made you kind of want to do that? Because it's sort of crazy.
It's because I could get out of doing more work on Teen Wolf right now. Because I'm supposed
oh my God.
I'm supposed to be editing, but I don't want to. And so I'm here instead. No, because I love you guys. And also, it means I don't have to do any work for a while.
Thank you. Thanks. Yeah.
Fair enough.
So that's, you know, sorry about that, rest of the Teen Wolf team and fandom, in case this episode that she's meant to be working on has a couple of bits missing because she's off gallivanting with us.
Unfortunately, I'm gonna just means I'm just gonna be here that much later tonight. Oh. But that's all right. I'll be drunk. It's cool. Don't worry about it.
That's good. Quality programming. Well, I mean, you sort of we talked about this when you came on before, but you started the show as an editor, and you've been on the writing team. Do you often sort of pick up like sort of the final bits of editing, or like do you sort of end up taking over the editing often, or is it sort of just everyone sticking in towards the end of the season situation?
I came in, well, like last season I only edited one episode. The first season I edited my normal amounts of episode and wrote at the same time. Three A I edited and wrote. That was insane. Last season, I only did episode 320, which is Echo House.
Yeah.
Well, Icon House, I don't remember. And then this season, actually, I just did the trailer, the first trailer, not the Comic-Con trailer, the very first trailer, I came and did that. And then they called me back just last week because, hey, on AfterBuzz, I can't cuss. Can I cuss on this?
Oh, yeah, technically.
We have before.
Yeah, Karen just barely ever swears in general, so I kind of bring mine down, like, so I don't sound like the really bad sweary one, but it's fine.
All right, well, yeah. I swear like a sailor, so...
Yeah, you can.
I have even been a sailor that swears as much as I do, so maybe they should say they swear like me. But anyway, we're in the typical Teen Wolf salad spinner of fuck.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we're doing reshoots tomorrow. We do reshoots every season, so it's not like anything was wrong. It's just that when we get to the finale, usually the last couple of episodes, we're just, you know, the scripts are barely done, you know, so we miss stuff and we have to get little pickups. Usually it's like little pickups and things that they just don't have time to do. So people are pacing around outside my editing bay right now, just trying to get that all done. And so they called me back in to try to help with episode 11. With Kim, which it's a fantastic episode. Oh my God, I am so excited for it. Just to do some music and things for that one. And then I did a little bit of 12 just to assembly so we could see if we needed some pickups tomorrow. And then I'm doing a little music on another episode right now. So yeah, I'm just kind of
Cool.
She's kind of a renaissance editor at this point.
Oh, well, you know, it seems like that, you know, we shouldn't keep you away from it for too long in that case, unless it's really, you know, doing your head in and making you want to die. So we'll, you know, whatever, you know, whatever seems fair. But you are the lead writer for an episode earlier in the season. I think you did episode 3, which I now can't remember the title of.
Muted.
Well, and then you did, your name is on the top of this one, but I think you said it was sort of at this point in the season, everyone was sort of throwing ideas together, but your name ended up on the top.
Yeah, I mean, we all throw ideas together for every episode. I actually feel like there's a storyline next week that I feel more like ownership of. But I did the first, like, actual writing of the script. I did the first couple acts. And then everybody took, like, an act and wrote on it. But we all kind of write. We do a lot of our writing in the outlining phase. So it was sort of my job to go get it, do a lion's share, maybe not the lion's share, but do a little bit more of this episode before we. And then next week, I think, is Angela who did it. I can't really remember anymore, but I think so. So, it's a little wacky. It's not exactly how all TV shows work, but because we do such a heavy outlining process, I mean, our outlines are very, very, full. This is how it works. So, yeah, I wouldn't exactly say, like, this is my episode. But, you know, if everyone liked it, then this is my episode. If you didn't like it, then it's
not yours.
It's probably Ian's.
Yeah. It'll be a cold day in hell before we have him on the podcast again.
Yeah, he talks a lot.
No, I'm joking. But yeah, he does. Yeah, if you like the episode, you can praise Alyssa via us because she doesn't come on Twitter. If you hated it, you can go and abuse Ian. He has a Twitter. Is it just Ian Stokes 82 or is it Stokes 82 at Twitter? I don't remember. If you didn't like the episode, you can go talk to him about it. So that's good. If you'd like to talk to us or to Alyssa via us, you can contact us on NATWpodcast at Twitter. You can contact us on NATWpodcast@gmail.com or our full Tumblr, which is notanotherteenwolfpodcast.tumblr.com, where you can leave an ask or, you know, just anything you want, really. You can also comment on the page on Hyperball or any of our personal accounts. But yeah, you can't talk to Alyssa because she's smart enough not to have one.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah.
I don't.
It's Ian Stokes 82 on
okay,
Twitter.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, just to make that really clear.
Yeah, if you've got anything bad to say, you can direct that to Ian, and I'm sure he'll pass it on to Alyssa and won't be annoyed at all. In terms of favorite quotes from the episode, as we usually do. Karen, did you want to start off with yours?
Sure. Mine's from Satomi, and I'll talk about this later, but I loved her so much in this episode. She was so amazing, but it was when she said, "I may have learned to control my anger, but I still know when to use it," and that's when the assassin's coming after them, and she, like, slices bullets in half and dodges them and then takes the assassin out, and it was just so cool.
Yeah, I really liked her return as well, and I think it's obviously a major part of the plot as opposed to a standalone thing to talk about here. And I've got a lot of questions about, like, how and why she became an alpha if she's all, like, sort of peaceful Buddhist. But yeah, I'm very excited about that, and I thought she was super cool in this episode. My favorite was actually Derek taking Brayden into hospital and, you know, sort of her asking kind of why or what he's doing, and he's kind of like all smirky, "I'm protecting my investment," which Alyssa says that was a line that she wrote, which is cool. But I just am very, very much appreciating the amount that Derek is chilling the fuck out this season, and I really, yeah. It's just so good. It's just my other favorite moment, like my proper favorite moment of the episode, was the conversation between him and Satomi about the tea and about his childhood, because it was the first time I think that we've ever seen him be normal, like literally normal, like talking about something normally that's not like my tragic werewolf past, just like normally talking about like a memory of his life. And it was just like a whole nother world. It was just like crazy. And I think it's really, really cool. And I just really, really want pretty much that all of the time. So, yeah.
You just basically want to read, like, Derek's shopping list? Is that what you're telling me?
Well, yeah.
Like, when he's out of mayo or, you know, ketchup? Or...
Yeah, and how he emotionally reacts to that. Like, because... because it's just, you know, you can only take so much angst for so long from someone.
I think you love all of his angst all of the time, I'm just saying.
I find it hilarious, mainly, which I'm not sure if this is the correct reaction or not, but I love seeing him, like, be, like, a vague semblance of normal. And I feel like since he de-aged and came back, he's been a lot... Like, because tiny Derek was, like, very chill. He was very, like... Besides from the, like, hysterical crying and stuff, like, he was very, like, chill and normal. And I really, I don't know, since then he's just seemed much more like, oh yeah, either, you know, having nicer emotional reactions to things or just sort of smaller, less like, I'm so mad all of the time. And it's great. But
maybe as he's losing more of his powers, his heart is growing to compensate. Like the Grinch.
Oh, isn't that nice? Yeah, that makes sense, I suppose. Is that a spoiler?
Yeah, he's the Grinch.
Cool.
That's the reveal. Cool. It's for the Christmas episode.
High Wolf exclusive.
The Teen Wolf Christmas. I think someone actually pitched that at one point. I was like, what are we going to do with that? But okay. You never know. Maybe season 12. I'll be long gone, but, you know, maybe that's...
I think that it could happen. You know, something horrible could happen. Everyone's Christmas trees could catch on fire or something, you know?
Right.
Something. Alyssa, did you have a particular favorite quote, either that you wrote or that someone else did?
I actually hardly ever remember if I wrote anything. I don't even know if I wrote the "I'm protecting my investment." I kind of vaguely remember saying that in the room, but so I'm going to claim it. but I really liked the Malia moment where she was talking about she was hearing how much she was worth on the list, and she quoted that they would take, you know, basically they would take Kira and Scott out way before her. So she was pleased by that. And I don't remember whose that was, but I really loved that moment. I think Shelley nailed it, and it was probably my favorite little moment of the show, not like the emotional moment, but just the little humor moment of the show. I love that character. I love Malia. I think she's doing a great job. Shelley in particular is really, really nailing it. So I'm very happy about that.
I think a lot of people are saying that. I mean, I know some people took a little while to get on board with Malia and everything. We kind of loved her right from the beginning because she is just so funny. But I think after this episode in particular, people are like, wow, Malia is, you know, such a great character. And so interesting, too. We haven't really had a female character like her on the show yet.
Absolutely. Well, and I think that's, I mean, we may talk about this later, but I think the women kicked ass last night. Like, it was all, when the elevator doors opened and Melissa McCall walked out like a boss, that was so
oh my God.
Cool.
Yeah.
Holy shit. I was, like, sitting on my couch and I lost my shit. I was just like...
Have you not seen it yet?
I had, but not in a long time, and I hadn't seen it with all of it put together, and sometimes I actually don't see the episodes until I see them on the air, if I'm not editing on them, you know, because I'm, like, always busy doing something else with Teen Wolf. I don't see all of them sometimes. Yeah. So, but this one I had seen before, but not, like, with everything put together, and I was just like, yeah, I feel like high-fiving my dog.
Yeah, it was great. I have a lot of questions, but it was great.
I think the first thing we should talk about is how you survived this episode, because you said you don't really like quarantine storylines, so how did that go for you?
Badly. It went badly, Karen. Perfect. I'm not going to lie to you. It went really badly. It was, it was really gross. And illness is one thing, but, like, seeing them set up those, like, tents inside the school, I was just like, yeah, nah. Like, it's, like, my worst... grossest, like, I just...
Do you like needles?
I don't, like, I have tattoos. I'm not, like, scared of needles. I just, I have, you know how some people are, like, scared of, I don't know, like, floods or, like, spiders or whatever? My biggest, I mean, it's not irrational. If it happened, I would be very, you know, it would be a very rational fear. But I hate, like, the idea of epidemics and quarantine and stuff like that. It freaks me the hell out. So, yeah. I think that you mentioned that you had some pretty good timing with setting up this episode for this week. So, yeah, in terms of what's going on in America right now,
It's not really happening in America. We have two Ebola victims in America. It's not like a lot of Americans. That's actually a pretty irrational fear. I mean, Ebola is fucking scary, but it's much more scary to have it in, you know, in the countries where it's, you know, where they don't have the infrastructure to support it. That's what's actually really scary. I think that the health workers that have been transported back here, I think, are doing well. But it just happened to land at a time when I know a lot of people are really freaked out by it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just like to add to irrational fear. I just like to really build it up and help cause panic. Cool. I think that's just adding, you know, a lot of things to the world.
Good job.
Yeah, that was completely random, but, you know.
Yeah.
Everyone needs a little more fear in their life. That's just what we all need.
Oh, good, good. Yeah, I think that's probably working out well for everyone. But, yeah, I did not like it, Karen, to answer the question. I mean, I liked the episode. I fucking hate the quarantine. Like, I just, no, it's very distressing to me. And, yeah.
That makes me super happy. Thank you, Natalie.
That's okay.
Like nicest thing I've heard all week. Thank
cool,
you.
Cool. Thanks for that.
So what did you think of the chemist? Because he really creeped me out.
I did not like him very much either, honestly. I was like, oh, more assassins. Ugh. But, like, I was a bit confused about, was the person he had in the chamber that was that, like, experimenting on, was that Brett? Or was that some random that we don't know?
No, that's not Brett. It doesn't look anything like Brett.
I don't know. He was just foaming at the mouth. I couldn't see who it was. Like, it was dark.
That was actually our stand-in. That's actually Tyler Posey's stand-in. Oh, his name is Tyler also.
Yeah, I've met him. Yeah,
Yeah, he was at BiCon. I think they'd done the makeup on him.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, he's just a poor random werewolf that the chemist had happened to, you know, trap.
Cool.
Was doing nefarious things to. You guys know who the chemist is, right?
Well, do you mean the actor or the character?
The actor.
No, I do not.
I mean, it depends on what way you geek, but he, James Urbaniak, is Dr. Venture on the Venture Brothers.
Okay, I don't know what that is.
Venture Brothers is a cartoon, adult cartoon. It was on Adult Swim, which it is super nerdy and super awesome, and I love it, and it's really funny and really great writing, and he plays Dr. Venture, who is fantastic, and if you guys have never watched it, check it out on Netflix or Hulu or whatever you get it. It's hilarious. It's got amazing acting talent in the show, and I was really, of all the people we've had on the show, I was probably most geeked to see him. I was like a total nerd. He's like, there's always one. Like, because it's not a huge show, so there's always, like, he's like, yeah, there's always one nerd that is really excited to meet me. And that was me.
That's awesome, though. His part, like, it kind of makes sense that you say he is, you know, famous for being a voice actor, because his delivery on pretty much every line was sort of stand out. And he was, he was like, we'll get to it, but the bit about the, like, he was talking about, like, the viruses, the it killed cows bit, the render pest, it just destroyed me. Like, I don't know. Fun. Yeah, it just destroyed me, the delivery. I don't know. It was just.
Can I add that I had a classics professor at UC Davis back in the day when I went to college there that totally reminded me of that guy. He was that creepy. He made everything in classics about sex. With a kind of the sort of James Urbaniak sort of way of delivering it. It was seriously the creepiest class I've ever taken.
Yeah. Nice. Okay, here's one thing I really like that I was is like major props to the whole show is that you guys keep nailing every issue that people bring up the week after, like, which is good because it means they all have to sit down and be like, oh, we shouldn't have worried. They had this in hand the whole time. Because it's not like you're responding directly to people screaming about it because it was all made ages ago. But for example, 2 weeks ago, when Scott, didn't notice that Brett was a werewolf, people were like, oh, in season two, he could tell Isaac was a werewolf right from across the field that he was a beta, and he got up in Brett's face and he's a true alpha and he couldn't tell that Brett was a werewolf. And everyone was like, oh, show, it's going so downhill, no continuity. Next week, it's actually directly addressed in a really awesome way why the people from that pack are not, smellable as werewolves or whatever.
Really good deodorant.
And this week... And this week had a few different issues that were addressed in the same way. One of them being us kind of last week, wondering about Derek's money, about the money that Scott was hoarding, like being Derek's money, and that's him technically stealing from Derek if he keeps it. And we were just like, is that not something that they've thought about at all, like the characters? And then, yes, this week it clearly is something that they have thought about a lot. Yeah. So, Karen, that scene between sort of Stiles and Scott, given what we sort of talked about last week, how did you end up feeling about that?
I think it played out perfectly, to be honest, because Scott was really hesitant about not telling Derek, but Stiles was like, well, technically half of it's Peter's money and we don't really like Peter, right?
So it's like, we'll keep 50 cents to the dollar. We'll keep 50 cents to each dollar. So that's fine.
Yeah. And I think, in terms of their characters, it worked out perfectly. It's exactly how they would react, obviously. But what I really like is how much Stiles and Scott balance each other out. Like, Scott brings Stiles up and Stiles kind of brings Scott down, and not in a bad way, but I think Stiles is much more of a realist, and it's just interesting to see that dynamic and them trying to figure out exactly which direction they should go in. And it happened the same way when they were trying to figure out if they should tell Malia about Peter or not. One of them was like, no, the other one was like, yeah, we probably should. And it's cool to see them discuss that without it being like this huge obstacle and, oh, I'm never going to talk to you anymore because you just don't understand my point of view.
Yeah, I mean, I felt like Stiles also kind of knew that what he was saying was really shifty. Like, he sounded like he was trying to convince himself. Like, he wasn't flat out arguing, but yeah, I don't know. Like, that was a very big thing, though. Last week we were like, guys, it's Derek's money. Just ask. He'll probably give you the money. It's fine. You don't have to, like, steal it from him. Like, it's fine. But, yeah, and I still think that would probably be the solution because, I don't know. Is it technically Peter's money? Like, is it, though? Is it? Or does he
Yes, it is. He's Hale, unfortunately.
So?
No, it is. Of course it's his money. He's a Hale. It's a Hale fortune. It's not the Derek's fortune.
Well, I don't know. How do you split it up equally? Is it, like, fair? Like, is it, like, whose money was it? Like, if it was just, one member of the families? I don't know. It's...
Do you want them to arm wrestle for it? Ooh, yeah. That's a really good idea.
Yeah. Shirtless?
They should shirtless arm wrestle. Ooh, just how about just shirtless wrestling altogether?
No.
They're like...
No.
Naked wrestling? Wait, no? Sorry.
I mean,
never mind.
Here's how these things end up happening on the show, I suppose. but I don't know. Well, does that mean that they will get less if Malia gets in on it as well? Like, it's has to belong to someone. How do they split it up? Like,
I don't know. How do the Rockefellers do it?
I don't know. Is that why they have to live together and, like, hang out when they clearly, like, really don't really like each other? It's like, ugh, we have to use the same money. Just, ugh.
I don't think Peter doesn't live there. I think he has nothing better to do. So he's just hangs out there. Plus Derek's loft is like the coolest place ever.
Yeah.
I'd hang out there too.
I suppose. But he needs to get a life. Anyway.
Well,
as I said, putting in issues that people start to scream and stamp their foot about and then obviously having them addressed later on the season is a nice thing to do. It means that people's expectations are nice and low, apparently, in terms of problems in television actually getting addressed later on, and Teen Wolf has proved very satisfying to me in that way.
I mean, I'm not going to say we don't have continuity issues, because we definitely do sometimes. I mean, that just happens with the amount of time we have to create the show. And that we sometimes forget. But this kind of thing, especially the whole money issue, was really important for Jeff as a theme this year.
Yeah.
You know, you notice that the main titles are gold.
Yeah.
That's for a reason. You know, it has sort of all tied in with the whole financial money issues. So, you know, all of that stuff in terms of character and how each character would deal with it, you know, and it's a way to tempt, you know, Scott's a Boy Scout, you know, and he's always trying to do the right thing. And that's actually makes him a very, it makes him a fantastic character, but it's, you know, it also sometimes a difficult character to write for, because, you know, that's not a very human way to be exactly. Like, we're a little, probably most of us, or at least I am, are a little more like Styles. You know, you try to convince yourself that, well, I would like this money, so let me justify it.
Yeah.
You know, Scott, though, but I mean, you know, he's under a lot of pressure with this financial stuff. So him having, you know, hiding it under the bed, you know, he there's a part of him thinking like Styles, but, you know, Scott just probably could never be that way.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we definitely thought about that with those characters. That was something Jeff wouldn't let us get away with not addressing that. That's for sure.
If they asked Derek for the money, they were like, here's your money back. We're really poor. We need a fraction of this, or we would like a fraction of this. Would Derek give them the money?
I mean, Derek probably is thinking about a new Camaro he might want to buy. When he's not under some weird Toyota contract, he would maybe like to have a Camaro back. So I don't know, maybe like a lot of Camaros. So he might have it earmarked for like Camaro, and then like maybe some new leather jackets, and like, I don't know, a new staircase, a new wall. He needs a new wall.
Yeah.
So I don't know if he has the money to spare, Natalie. I don't know.
Okay. I mean, that's kind of what we were like last week as well about Scott. I'm like, were they always in financial trouble, or is it just since they've had to constantly keep, like, fixing the walls of that house because, like, people still, like, break through them? Because they had a big house, which is, you know, probably, like, you know, I think Jeff has said before that she inherited it from her mother, so it's probably not, like, on a mortgage or anything. So, like, you know, where's the, you know, are nurses really that low paid? Like, is she not getting any money from agent or anything? Like, why are they so poor? And I've made the conclusion that it's because they have had to constantly repair the house from being broken through the wall, or, you know, stabbed or exploded and things like that.
Well, I think she's probably had to take a lot of pay cut
yeah.
at that hospital just because of all the electricity damage and the werewolf damage. So there's probably been a lot of pay cuts at the hospital. And yeah, I mean, they were always poor. Like, you know, I always thought that was kind of funny too when I first started doing season one. You know, we shot in Atlanta, and the outside of the house was so nice.
Yeah.
You know, living in LA, you know, like that house would be
that size,
worth a lot. Except, you know, it is inherited. Like that's the story. And, you know, I think she was a home for a long time. I'm not sure if agent's always been providing.
Yeah.
You know, he's back in the picture now, but, you know, maybe he has a lot of gambling debts. Let's go with that.
Yeah. Okay.
Because I just gave him a backstory. He has a lot of gambling debts.
Oh my god. Yeah. Speaking of last season and hospital damage, just while we've got you, we saw earlier in this season, this current season four, like Violet, for example, being arrested straight up by the police for doing murders, which, you know, we rarely see happen in Teen Wolf, and it was a refreshing change. Styles. Was he not seen murdering a lot of people in the hospital? Was he never pulled up for that? Like, what was the situation for you guys in terms of the consequences of Styles as the Nagitsune?
Yeah, so I was gone by the time the 12th was written. I was editing. I could help. I think that one of the things that Oni can do are turn off any security cameras or surveillance cameras. So... and most of the people that saw Styles were definitely slashed in half by a katana.
Okay.
So I think he was probably, you know, maybe the Oni went back through afterwards, and anyone who was still alive, they just made sure that they were killed. But yeah, that was just all swept under the rug. The sheriff has a lot more power, I think, than you know of in that town. He's got everybody by the balls. I don't know if that's true.
As he should.
Yeah.
But yeah, Karen, you were mentioning Satomi earlier.
Yes.
You want to sort of
talk about her now and how awesome she is?
Yeah, go ahead.
Because we see Deaton, and he has some serious fighting skills that I'm not entirely sure we knew he had before, so that's kind of awesome. And Satomi just kind of, like, challenges him to a duel as friends, you know, just because she can, I guess. He didn't really seem surprised by it, so it must be a thing for them. But I really liked Deaton this episode because he was a bit more useful than he usually is. And I like Satomi because she came in and she felt like a different person. She felt like somebody who had changed a lot over the years, became more zen and all of that. And she was just, you could tell how much she cared about her pack and how much she wanted to help and figure out what exactly was going on, and it was just really nice to have her come back like that.
Yeah, I definitely wasn't expecting to see her again until the sort of synopsis and stuff came out, and I'm like, that's a real cool character to, like, bring back. I have a question about how she became an alpha. Is that something we'll ever find out?
You know, I don't, you know, those are the kind of things that we talked about that. We talked about the backstory. Jeff loves her. He was definitely the one that was like, I want to bring Satomi back because I love her.
Yeah.
He loves the character, and the actress is fantastic. She's just a really lovely lady. And so he, you know, we definitely talked about her with, you know, we had the ability to bring some people back because of the Deadpool. And I don't remember if we... I mean, I know Jeff has a specific idea about her alphaness, but I know it was a lot had to do with, you know, her sort of finding a way to control her anger.
Yeah.
And taking sort of, you know, I feel like her pack is a lot of Omegas, you know, who were.
Yeah.
She takes in like the orphans.
Strays. Yeah.
The strays.
That's kind of what we thought as well, but we didn't know whether she was actually, until we saw her this episode, you know, when the mention last week, we talked about whether she'd actually be an alpha or whether she was just sort of the lead beta of a bunch of Omegas, like people who sort of wanted to come together and have a sort of peaceful life and stuff like that, like a, you know, little meditation circle or whatever. Because, you know, Derek mentions, you know, she did a thing and it changed her. That was like throwing that Molotov cocktail at Reese and making the Nagitsune and stuff. So I was like, if she like committed herself to like peace after that, when did she go and like kill an alpha to become an alpha? Or did she become one? Was her family or like, you know, was it inherited? Like, was it like her mother was an alpha over in Japan or whatever, and then she died and automatically became an alpha? Anyway, I was just curious because she was so committed to peacefulness, how she became an alpha. So,
well, I mean, let's remember Scott never killed anyone to become an alpha either.
Yeah.
I think there's more paths to alphahood than just taking it.
Yeah.
Especially coming from a Buddhist type of thing. But, you know, this is the type of thing that is certainly not canon. I mean,
yeah,
it's something we might, if we had time, you know, to bring her back and talk about if it was relevant to, you know, the storylines of the future. But maybe not, and it's the kind of thing that is fun for other people to speculate about or to write about.
Yeah.
I think that leaves a lot of, you know, it's fun to create some backstories for some of these characters that we certainly haven't said officially. So I don't know, you know,
yeah,
we never really settled anything officially that I remember, so I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to write a name as
enough.
Grade.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I was thinking that as well. Like, I don't know about you, Karen, but given even the little of her we've seen so far and what we know about, like, the way that she likes to live and stuff, you know, even though the true alpha is meant to be, like, once in 100 years or a generation or whatever, she certainly seems to have the kind of attitude that, you know, she could sort of be one with Scott in terms of that, even though she's not worth $25 million. So, yeah.
Well, she's certainly not as powerful as Scott, I don't think, in some ways. But, you know, she's had 60-plus years also of adventure.
Yeah.
Since the last time we saw her, you know, she's definitely had some interesting things happen to her. So, you know, that's a rich character to, unfortunately, on a show called Teen Wolf, we don't spend a lot of time with our characters
Grandma
over
Wolf.
25,
like,
right?
Yeah.
Spinoff show. I'd watch
Which
it.
Which I think is, you know, I mean, I think it's unfortunate, not from Teen Wolf's perspective, but just from Hollywood's perspective sometimes. I think it's unfortunate that we don't have time to spend with more characters like that. I mean, I love our characters. We already have too many characters we don't have enough time to spend with. But, you know, in my head, she has lots of really fun adventures.
Yeah.
Because I love her. Yeah.
So one of the things that we've been seeing floating around on the internet lately after this episode was the PSATs. And people are just kind of curious about that because typically when you take the PSATs, the practice SATs, you do it in your sophomore year, but we know that Scott and Stiles and all of them are juniors. And I think people were just wondering, you know, if there was a reason like behind changing that or if it was just like, well, this is one of those things that we have to do to kind of like put them in this situation.
I can say that we have been pitching. I have been pitching the PSAT since season 3A. I did not take it my sophomore year. I know I did not take my PSAT my sophomore year. I went to also a really backwoods redneck high school that didn't even have calculus. So maybe that's because why we took it our junior year. But I took my PSATs in the fall of my junior year, and then I took my SATs. Then in the in the spring, I think. Or maybe
yeah,
that's not...
that, I mean, that seems to make sense to me. I don't go to your weird country, but okay, if this is talking about the test you do for like your final grade for applying to college,
that's the practice one.
Yeah, yeah, but the SAT is the college admission test, right, or whatever. Like
yes,
let
yes,
me
yes.
tell you how it works here. We take our final exam, or whatever, in all of our different subjects that we have, is at the end of our 12th grade, the end of our senior year. We do the mock one in the middle of that year, so the middle of our very final year at school. And we don't know where we're going to uni until after we finish high school. Like, we do the final thing, our final semester of high school, is those final exams. Submit to the, you know, and all it is that you don't get an application. It's just based on the exam, like your entrance exam, basically. Not the exam, but your exam and the work you've done that year. It's all sort of calculated up.
Right.
And then 3 weeks after you finish high school, the uni results come out. You find out where you got a uni. You have the summer off, and then that's it. I find it really weird that you guys have all your college, like, planned out all through your senior year. That's definitely not what we do here. So this was all very confusing to me to start with. So
yeah, yeah. I mean,
welcome to America.
Yeah, well, the Australia, I took some tests in Australia, too, and all of them in college were involved sitting in giant, scary rooms with blue books in front of you. So I'm not sure Australia is that much superior.
Oh, I don't know.
But... I don't, you know, it's been a long time. I know I did some research before, and it looks like, you know, looking really quickly, a lot of people do take it in 10th grade. I know I took mine in the 11th grade, but I could have just been, I took my ASFAB. That was like maybe that was the 11th grade. Oh, crap. I don't know. I do know that we have been pitching it for a long time, and it just worked out of the story this time. But, you know, I did definitely do some research about, you know, the National Merit Scholarship and that type of thing. And, you know. So maybe Beacon Hills just sort of is a little repressed because of all the murder.
They've had a lot of upheavals, yeah.
Yeah,
so...
The last time they took it, there was like a giant earthquake and a sinkhole appeared into hell. So that's what happened there.
Yeah.
I mean, we could give them some wiggle room. That's fine.
Yeah. It made sense to me, but you're sort of...
I honestly didn't even think about it. Like, it didn't even cross my mind until I saw a bunch of things on Tumblr. And I was like, well... At least this is an opportunity to ask. But I know Scott's been practicing for a while doing his, like, daily word things, and it's nice to kind of see that come to fruition, you know, to, like, see the end result, why he's been practicing and trying to be better at school and everything. So I actually really liked this whole scene because we saw a lot of Mrs. Martin, which is really nice to see her back. And Coach Finstock, they apparently know each other fairly well. And we found out that he's been sober for 15 years, which I feel like is important. And now I really want to know more about Coach Finstock.
Yeah, I couldn't tell whether that was meant to be a hilarious joke or a really serious moment. I kind of took it both.
Yeah, well, I mean, it kind of is. Jeff was actually really keen on that. Like, his whole time with Coach, you know, like, Coach, like, pretending to be hungover all the time and everything.
Yeah.
That's, like, in Jeff's head, the Coach was always just kind of putting on a show about that. Like, yeah. he was tired or whatever, but he was not drunk. Like, he actually has been sober. Wow. For 15 years. Like, that's been in Jeff's head the whole time. So the fact that he could play it out, he was really excited about
that. That's really cool.
It sort of makes Coach, like, taking all those, you know, taking all the ibuprofen and stuff earlier. It makes it, you know, if you go back now and watch, you're like, ah, oh, that's kind of funny.
Like that.
And Natalie.
No.
I want to interrupt about the PSAT because I get really all caught up in this kind of stuff. Ian's always like, Alyssa, nobody cares. I'm like, I care. So I'm just reading this right here. PSAT scores from, this is just from one college. PSAT scores from your sophomore year don't count toward National Merit Scholarships eligibility, but PSAT scores from your junior year do count. So a lot of people do take it in their junior year. So take that, Tumblr.
Okay.
All right. Fair enough. All I'm saying.
I would have thought taking it in year 10, like the sophomore year, was really early for like college.
But yeah, I didn't. Like, good Lord, yeah.
With Coach, I really liked the stuff in 3A between him and the orderly, Brunsky, who is like our least favorite character on the show, probably.
3B.
And was that 3B? God, where are we even up to? Yeah. No, I keep forgetting. Are we in season 5? I keep forgetting where we're up to. Yeah, that dude and his kind of interactions with Coach was really, it was so good. And then this was also a thing. Also, Mrs. Martin has a cool first name that we haven't learned before. That was nice.
Natalie? Yeah.
Yeah. You know, that rare and special name. So I liked that as well, basically.
It was fun to see her again. And she's, I love Susan.
Yeah.
Susan Walters is fantastic. I mean, her and Lyndon are two of my favorite people on the show, of course. Yeah. So I like a lot of people on the show, but I just love those guys. So it's awesome when she could come in and be all badass and smart.
She was awesome.
She was on point this entire episode. And one of our friends, Ev, at Defining Random on Twitter, she was like, Mrs. Martin, just good adulting. And that can kind of apply to like all of the adults in this episode. And I mean, on the show in general, usually the portrayals of the parents are really, really good, but this episode was just really awesome for the parents. And I love seeing that on a typically teen focused show.
Yeah. I think it's important. You know, it's always been, Jeff has always mentioned to us, you know, when we're talking about the characters, is that like, sure, TV is based on conflict, and a lot of conflict is not having all the information. If all of the characters told everybody everything all the time, you don't have conflict, you don't have TV. You know what I mean? Like, that's just the basis of it. But at the same time, we didn't want to have a whole bunch of adults who were just completely stupid.
Yeah.
And sure, sometimes they do things that like are not the most well thought out, or they make mistakes like everybody. But we, you know, most of our adults, at least our core, we want them to be active participants. That, you know, we're making choices that as an audience we can be behind. And, you know, she does everything right this episode. I love it when the kids walk in and she screams at them to get out. And, you know, it's fantastic. It was just fantastic. It was really a nice portrayal and she did a great job.
Yeah. I mean, the circle of people who, I mean, she's not in that circle yet. I mean, maybe she is, but doesn't know about it, if you know what I mean. Maybe she knows about Banshees from her family, but doesn't know what's going on with Scott and all of that. But we don't know that yet. But the circle of people that do know about Scott's pack and stuff is getting larger. Like, you know, Mr. Yukimura, his involvement as well. And it's all just like they have a really reliable, like, base of people now that are sort of in on it. And that's really cool. I like that. I don't need it to be teens. I'm okay with the dynamic of the adults as well. I don't know. More teens? Is that something that's required? Does it need to be more teens?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think it just needs to be compelling characters. You know, if you go look at old Hollywood, you know, all of the people that were heroes were adults.
Yeah.
I mean, you had some child actors and some child heroes, but you know, it definitely got younger later in Hollywood, and which is cool too. I mean, I love you know, I love seeing teenagers. It's a very complicated time of life. So it creates a lot of conflict and it creates a lot of interesting choices. And it's, you know, you're definitely at an access in your life then making choices that are important, you know, for where the rest of your life is going to go. And so, you know, it's a fun time to write for. But no, yeah, absolutely. We have crisis all the way through our life, right? Like, am I going to go home and have a gin and tonic or am I going to go home and have a bourbon? Like, these are... you know, that could really change my whole evening. So I have to think about these things and there's some conflict there because like, what if Jessica, my partner, what if he's drunk my favorite bourbon and, oh, now I'm just getting angry thinking about it. And,
this could be a whole show of its own. I mean,
I might text him right now to make sure that, you know, it's only 4:51 here that he hasn't drank any of my bourbon yet. Cause it's not time until after 5 o'clock. So yeah,
you guys go ahead. That. Pitching your own show about those important adult conflicts. So I think that's great. The situation with the Center for Disease Control, I mean, that's, as I said, very, very quick thinking, obviously, but also super gross and scary. I mean, has she seen something like this before, or was she just like, oh, this is a gross virus, it's probably a problem? Like, it was...
Well, she's the biology... teacher. So I think that's what she said. She was like, oh, you know, maybe I was just the biology teacher that was overreacting, which yeah. I liked that she maybe I'm wrong, but I want to do this just in case.
One of my favorite things about this show is Scott McCall's like hero worship of cool adults, because when she said that, like his little, like the way he looked at her and he kind of did this smile at her. And I don't know if it was, like, a big thing, but it was so... I really noticed it. And he was like, you're cool, lady. Good for you. And he was really like, oh, I love him reacting to things. But, yeah.
I can see Posey on set, like, probably being like, that is cool. And just, yeah. like, it really coming through.
It was really, like, he always... He has it a lot with Melissa, obviously. He has a lot of, like, this, like, oh, my God, my mom is the coolest person who's ever lived. She's so more badass than anyone who can ever do anything whenever she does something, you know, cool, which is totally valid. Like right back from season 2 where they're like, Mom, you do it. And they're all freaked out about touching Jackson and stuff. And it's like, yes, right. You may be a werewolf, but you're still a teen. And he always has that with Melissa. And I just saw a little bit of that transfer to Mrs. Martin as well, because she was, yeah, sort of being all, like, boss, but also, like, yeah, and he was kind of just, like, the little smile is just like, yeah, you're cool. Yeah, it was
pretty
great.
Good. Hey, Natalie, just to freak you out a little bit more,
good.
In the last couple months, there's been some, the CDC came under fire, it was National Institute of Health, I think, actually, because they lost a couple vials of smallpox. They found them again. Have you ever Googled smallpox?
I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to take your bait, Alyssa.
The images, you know, when we were doing this episode, it's horrifying.
Don't do it.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's like, it's a horrifying disease.
That was sort of, they had that conversation.
Oh my God. Sorry, Karen, I'm not as strong-willed as you.
Don't take her bait.
I'm not. Holy crap.
Natalie, come on, join the party.
No.
Oh, you really don't want to. Oh, okay, I'm closing this out right now.
Okay. Anyway, they have that discussion about which diseases have been eradicated. Who did the research about Rinderpest? Was that?
Oh, that'd be me.
Yeah. Oh God, it was so weird. It was so weird, and they all looked at him like he was so weird. Is that okay? That thumbprint, the ink signing in, is that a thing, or is that just kind of your way of, you know, having a reason to spread the disease?
I don't think that, oh, Jesus, I just looked up Rinderpest. I'd looked it up before, but I'd mostly just seen a bunch of dead cows, which also disturbs me, being that I'm a huge animal lover. But, oh, yeah, oh, okay. Sorry. That's bad. I don't think, we were just talking about security on SATs and PSATs, and they started to take it very seriously, because every year someone comes in and, you know, you pay somebody to take that test for you, because there's so much pressure to do well. on those tests to get into good schools, which I'm not sure is how we should be basing our education, but that's just a whole completely different subject.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think somebody looked it up and found that there were a couple of cases of doing this, actually doing a thumbprint. I doubt they would do it in a normal high school. But yeah, we just thought it'd be kind of a fun way to transfer a virus. And when I say fun, I mean, you know, it's super fun when you give people illnesses.
Yeah.
I find when I use fun way with Teen Wolf, I'm always like, yeah, it's a fun way to have a mass grave.
Yeah.
You know, like that's
a fun way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The chemist, I guess the PSAT supervisor / chemist / evil render pest man, what he said about like them cutting off service, is that a thing in like quarantine environments to stop panic and things like that? Because that freaked me out.
Yeah, definitely. Actually, they do that sometimes.
You're going to give Natalie nightmares, just so you know. And I have to deal with her.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's like when I go over to my friend's kids' houses, and I like to tell them, like, you know that ashes, we all fall down? That's about the plague.
Oh.
And then the three-year-old looks at me, and then their parents look at me, and I'm like, aren't you glad I came over? And then I show them pictures of the plague. And that's why I'm not asked to babysit very often. But I don't think that that is common, Natalie. I'm sure the conspiracy theorists in the audience will say that the government does that all the time. They do have the ability to, you know, cut off communication and things for sure. Yeah. Would they do it in high school once again? Like, you know, Natalie, you're probably good if you go back to high school and you do catch some sort of variant of distemper or smallpox. You probably are going to be able to call somebody to say goodbye.
Okay. Thanks for that assurance. Thanks. Yeah. I feel better now.
Yeah, that's what I'm here for.
I was kind of watching this through, and Satomi's pack, like, that, you know, Brayden found, you know, dying of illness and things like that. Like, she has a... I'm a bit confused as to who shot Brayden next to a bunch of dying werewolves. Are we meant to assume that was the chemist, or is that a story yet to come? Was he there to do his visual confirmation and then, someone's in the way, shot you?
It wasn't the chemist. In fact, this never really came out in the storyline, but at one point we talked about how the chemist was definitely a hands-off kind of killer. Like, there's different types of killers in the world and things, and I sound like I'm not an expert on the different types of killers. I only know the type I am, but some of them are like bludgeoners or stabbers. Some people like to do things very, like, to be up in the action, and some are more poisoners or things like step back, and they don't actually want to be there to see their, you know, their work at hand. And we talked about the chemist, how his undoing was when he picked up a gun, because that's not the type of killer he was. Now, look, that is really subtle subtext that I don't really think ever really came through, because we didn't have time. I mean, this episode has an extra
footage,
like 7 or 10 minutes.
Wow. We,
good Lord, if we have time, Jeff talked about maybe putting on the, you know, on the DVD, but once again, we are so slammed for time, and MGM has to do this stuff way ahead of time, so who knows if we're going to have time to do that. I don't want to get people like, oh, we want to see that. I would love to, because there was, like, moments, like when Derek kicked open the door with Brayden, that had to be cut so short, and I was like, no, that's a moment that should be really long, like him bringing her in his arms. I mean, that's like the cover of a romance novel.
Oh my God.
I love that shit.
Yeah.
So it was so good. And, you know, it was really, it had to be, you know, every second had to be tight on that episode, because it just happened to be one that there was so much good stuff that we had to really edit it out, and it was a bummer.
Well, I mean, there's always YouTube. I have no idea about, like, the licensing and legality of just putting your own extra clips on YouTube, but, you know, you should do that. That's the thing you should do.
Yeah, I don't know how it all works with, you know, all the, you know, there's not just MTV, there's MGM and everything else involved. That kind of stuff makes my head hurt, because I don't think about it.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm trying to remember if there were... Okay, I'm just pausing this for a second. I'm trying to remember... I can't work out if Alyssa's given me nightmares or not, basically, is the question. Was there a moment in this episode where there was a blonde female assassin that then rapidly got killed, who looked kind of like Kate but wasn't Kate?
There's just the girl that was crying in the lobby when Melissa walked by her?
I don't remember.
So the first time Melissa comes out of the elevators, she walks by a woman who's crying.
Yeah.
And sitting in the chair, and she kind of glances at her.
Yeah.
And that is the same woman who comes in
after
shooting
Derek.
At them.
Yeah.
Oh. That's cool. I didn't notice that.
Okay, I was that entire scene, I didn't end up making a note about it, and I'm like, did I dream this? Did I dream the scene into the episode? No, I didn't. But yeah, that's and that's just another person who happens to know about the Deadpool, is that right?
That's another assassin, yeah.
Yeah, cool.
I think we just called her the crying woman because, you know, she's there and gets killed.
Yeah, fair enough. Because Karen, that was what you mentioned, Satomi's whole thing. Sorry.
Yeah.
I literally thought I was going crazy. Sorry about that. Moving on with the actual order of the episode. Do we know, Alyssa, you know, Satomi's pack member that she brings to Deaton who's infected, the one who is already kind of almost dead, is that her last pack member, or is this it for her, or has she got some others hidden in a bunker that are not so bad?
Brett's still alive.
Oh, good old Brett.
Yeah, he's still around, and I think it's safe to say that Brett's still around. There might be a few others lingering.
Yeah,
she has a lot of runaway. She had a school for runaway werewolves.
Oh.
She doesn't, but that's how I like to think of her.
Yeah.
And she may have a few lingering. Brett for sure is still alive.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, you know, that's nice that she's at least got one little werewolf child left, I suppose. If Derek wasn't number one fan of the, you know, Scott McCall fan club, I would think that she would be a very good place for Derek, because he seems the type to be into, like, Zen Buddhism and meditation and, like, being calm and drinking, you know, tea and pruning bonsai plants and stuff. Like, I feel like that could really be a good place for him.
Ooh, he could do Ikebana.
Yes, on
that's Japanese flower arranging.
Yes, I think he would really flourish there. I really do. I think that it would suit him. I think it would suit his new self. I think he would become free. And maybe one day he could, you know, write some existential novels or something. Because
do you think one of the fans could draw up a picture of Derek Hale doing some Japanese flower arranging for him?
Yes. Hey, Megan Archer, draw that. And get back to us, and I will send it to Alyssa.
That would be amazing. I had a Ikebana teacher when I did it for just like a little class once.
I can already imagine his eyebrows like really concerned, like while doing it.
Yeah, you have to really think about it. She used to come by and like snip like all my flowers off, and she would say, "Not necessary, not necessary." And so I say that now in my regular life when someone does something in editing, I'm like, "Not necessary,"
because
she was like a ninth degree black belt in flower arranging. She was fucking amazing. But yeah, so I would like to see, like, she would
Why
be like
get
Derek's
a
alpha.
Teacher to come to set and have everyone do a little bit of a lesson, and have Tyler Hoechlin participate in that lesson and take some photographs.
I'll see if I can arrange that.
But yeah, no, drawing definitely not even a problem. Will come very soon. But yeah, so I really like Satomi and the idea of her pack and what could potentially be, you know, a really sort of a refuge kind of place for them. So Brayden, as we've said, she was at the hospital. She tells Derek and Melissa that it wasn't, you know, that she didn't find the wolves poisoned. She found, you know, a virus. And I mean, our conclusion was that the only reason Brayden would find all these dying werewolves randomly when they weren't her task at all was that she was after Kate and that Kate was at the same place. So, I mean, if Kate was the one that shot her, and she wasn't involved in all of this, why was she in the clearing with all the dying werewolves, Alyssa?
Yeah, these are all really good questions.
Good. Cool. Thanks. How good are you? Like,
no, these are the kind of things.
Here, like,
These are the kind of things that you might, you know, we could just keep watching and see if they're answered. And if they're not, then you could ask Jeff.
Okay, fair enough. Cool. Thanks. Karen?
So the next part is we get Lydia, and she was kind of separate from pretty much all of this craziness up until about, I don't even know if it was like halfway through the episode or not, but she wasn't really involved earlier on, and we get her by herself in the lake house, and she tries talking to Meredith, but Meredith doesn't talk back to her, and so she just apologizes, which I really liked because it not that it was out of character or anything, but it was bothering me that she had been so mean to Meredith. And like I said last week, I totally understand it because everybody's under a lot of pressure, but I'm glad that, like, you know, Lydia just took a moment to be like, I'm sorry. And she packs up all of Meredith's things back into the box that she was going through of her effects. And we see a picture of Meredith in the lake house.
Yeah. Woo.
What?
Whoa. Hold the third.
It's kind of nutty, huh?
Crazy. How did that get there? Like,
I don't know. That's probably just some random. That probably is just some random continuity problem.
Yeah, it can't mean anything at all.
No, like, why would that mean anything, right? No, we just picked some stuff to put in that box and just, like, fuck it.
Oh, yeah, let's just take this picture here. Just no problem. Like, yeah, we don't have anywhere else better to take it. Might as well.
Right.
Natalie, since I know Lisa probably can't say anything about this, but did the picture look super old to you? Am I just making that up?
I mean, I think it did, but it also could have just been really bad quality. I don't know. Like, is it old or is it like Instagram old, if you know what I mean? Like
there's a filter. There's a couple filters. Yeah.
I don't know. Possibly. Yeah, possibly. I don't quite know. I mean, I was never quite sure about Meredith, but I liked the character, but Lydia's treatment of her was something that, again, we talked about last week and then was addressed this week, and, like, Lydia knowing. My sort of reading of that, which may or may not come up later, is that Lydia, number one, wanted information and wanted it quickly, but number two was very angry, at looking at the state Meredith was in because she feared coming like that herself if she couldn't sort of get a control of, what was going on, because she already has distorted reality.
So I obviously, we're not going to get any answers about this, but do you think that Meredith will be making a reappearance at some point, either like as a ghost or a vision or something? So we don't know exactly how Lydia's powers work, but I would really like to see her come back.
I mean, I think that she could. I mean, it seems very confusing at the moment in terms of how Banshees work, if they are, if they have to be alive, like what their connection to the dead even is. Like, it doesn't really make a lot of sense to me at the moment, the Banshee situation. We don't really know much about their connection, what their specific connection to the dead is, if they have to even be alive to be functioning, like if it would be possible for Lydia to hear from Meredith at all, given that she is dead, basically. Anything you can say on that matter?
Well, no, but I think, well, I kind of like it, discovering that with Lydia.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of a really fun part of the process. I think Lydia's story has really maybe taken the longest, in a way. It's been a very slow growth for that character, which I love. I mean, we've just taken a lot of time with that, and I'm really glad that she has such a focus this season. It's been no secret that I have been everybody is, but I really love that character and have always, and Angela too. We definitely feel very protective of her. Ian's always given me shit about that, actually. He's always like, well, if I'm like late or have to go somewhere or something, and she's like, that's fine, I'm just gonna kill Lydia or Rita.
Oh my god.
Yeah, that's right. You could maybe talk about that on Ian's Twitter. He says something like that. He uses it as a way to fuck with me. But it's sort of more like I like to discover what Lydia can do, sort of as Lydia's doing. I'm not trying to be. I think there's just a lot of fun, because and Holland does such a great job this last episode of. You could just really feel her frustration, like she knows she has this ability, but she doesn't know what to do with it or how it can help her. And, that can be translated to just anything when you're sort of in that transitioning phase of going to college. It's like, well, I think I'm good at math, but am I really good at math? Am I going to get to college and everyone's much smarter than me and I'm not going to know what to do with my math skills? Or that wasn't my problem, by the way. Yeah. But, just using that as an example, you know, it is, you know, that's just more on a human level, but you know, in a genre show, we take it to the higher level of, what about a higher level, the you know, supernatural level of, she has this ability and she wants to help her friends as opposed to just being someone who finds dead bodies. I mean, that's got to be really a crappy thing to keep happening to you. So yeah, I mean, I kind of want to discover it with her.
Yeah, you know? No, fair enough. I have enjoyed it as well. It is frustrating, but yeah, she seems very sort of quiet and frazzled and very worn out at the moment, and you know, constantly very pale and wilting, and it's, you know, rather sad, but you know, hopefully things will potentially look up and that Ian won't just randomly kill her off while you have
to while I'm out getting a coffee.
Yeah
no, I mean I mean that's kind of why, I mean, her character to me is the most ragged and sad in a way, because you know, everybody else's power is something that they've either learned a little control with, or they can use at the moment. I mean, if they're not dying in a vault or something, but I mean, they can, you know, Scott can pull out his fangs and his claws, and you know, Kira has her sword and her abilities, and Lydia, it's sort of off and on, it's sort of random, and it's so, you know, it's so depressing. Like, you know, it's just all about death and destruction and, you know, feeling that your friends are gonna die, and you know, she typed in that Derek is, you know, like that's a pretty heavy thing.
Yeah.
And I hope it's freaking people out.
with Lydia too, it's all internal, which I think is what you were saying, because she was talking to Malia and she was like, I don't have claws and fangs like you guys, I just have voices in my head. And that's so much harder to control than something physical, you know, and she doesn't have a lot of people helping her like Scott did. And I think that's one of the reasons why I really like her too, is because she really is going at this alone, and yet she's still doing it. She hasn't given up, and she's such a strong character.
Mm. Yeah, what Karen said. Karen said it better than I did. Yeah, good job, Karen.
Yeah. Oh God.
It's like she's like a long distance runner, and like Scott's on the lacrosse team.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, she's like all on her own, running through the forest, trying to figure this. She doesn't have a team to support her.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well,
I mean, she does, but she, you know, not really. Yeah.
Yeah. And then she sort of berated someone, you know, the only person that could possibly help her into killing themselves, which is a slight discreditation of that entire process. Oh, anything you can tell, by the way, I guess I'll just ask now, anything that you can tell us about Meredith's death? Was it a legit suicide? Was it, you know, something hidden as murder? Are we meant to have known that, or is that a mystery yet to come? Or are we just meant to take it as we saw it, like her sort of own trauma or even the benefactor's influence making her kill herself?
Yes.
That. All of those.
Good answer.
Thanks. Cool. All
You're
right.
Welcome. I'm glad I can shed some light on the things that are really bothering you.
Noted. Kira, you know, accidentally or on purpose or something, doesn't like needles. So she was like, you know, electric zapped the one of the workers who was basically trying to do the blood test on her, which was, you know, unusual, I suppose. They all found that slightly odd. You know, I'd expect people would start asking questions pretty soon. But, you know, she runs out, you know, the worker runs out because the suit is compromised. So we have kind of two aspects there. Kira, you know, learning about Kira's power, and also the whole scene between Agent McCall and Sheriff Stilinski, you know, debriefing each other, which was interesting. They have a fun dynamic. Kira, Karen, like, what did you think of this kind of electrocution thing before Alyssa confirms or denies it for us?
I think it was definitely accidental. I don't think she meant it, whether she was afraid of the needles or whether she was afraid of just getting tested and what would be in her blood. I don't know if they would find anything different because of what she is, but I just particularly loved that even though we're moving on, and yes, this is like very much about Lydia right now discovering her powers and how that's going to help them deal with the Deadpool and all of that. We haven't forgotten about Kira, and we're still learning about her powers and what she's capable of, and she's still struggling with it. So I think it's cool to every once in a while, like, bounce back and be like, oh, look, Kira's still struggling because she did just find out that she's a Kitsune. So that's always cool.
I mean, was that sort of the intention, Alyssa? Like, is it meant to, what happened there? Like, why did that happen?
Well, here's some inside baseball on that one. Baseball is a sport we play here in the United States.
Oh, thanks.
It's kind of like cricket.
But less boring?
I don't know about less boring. I love baseball. I'm not going to go in. I could talk about baseball for like a whole nother podcast, so we won't, because I was just at the Dodger game on Sunday, but they lost, but whatever. Matt Kemp hit a home run, so it's cool. So I'll stop doing that now. But I think originally it was Malia, and her claws came out because she was freaked out by needles. It changed to Kira because of a plot point that we then changed back, but then we thought it was kind of a fun little thing for Kira. And I think it does. I kind of like the sort of deeper aspects of, you know, the fear of maybe finding something about her is nice too. But it started off as just it was a quarantine episode and people are scared of that. Natalie is an example. But here's a kind of a funny little mention of Jeff. So we're talking about, I really wanted to make sure that we had the needles rolling out, like there's that rollout packet of needles, because a lot of people are freaked the fuck out by needles. Mm-hmm. I was like, we're pitching the scene, or me and someone else were like pitching the scene to Jeff, and he's like, well, what about, I don't understand why they'd be scared. We're like, well, because like people pass out when they get their blood taken. He's like, they do? I'm like, yeah, people are scared of needles. He's like, they are? And I'm like, yes, Jeff, that's like a very basic fear. And then I was like, how much heroin are you doing? And no, he doesn't do any heroin. He doesn't do any heroin. No, look at he's in way too good of shape for heroin. But that's just not something he's scared of. So he just didn't, it's just one of those things, like, he's so not scared, but he did not realize it was I thought that was really funny. We're like, yeah, no, people don't like needles very much most of the time. And so that was just a reaction that Kira had to just, you know, maybe making her a little more human and relatable. How about that? You know, like, that is something a lot of people, when they know they have to have their blood taken, that's like, if you've ever had that done, the nurse always, I don't mind needles. I don't mind having my blood taken. I actually think it's kind of fun, which is weird, I know, but I think it's based on the fact that when you do it, they give you snacks. And like one time, they had these little sandwiches, and there's nothing I like better than, I like sandwiches, and I like little sandwiches even better. And so they gave me all these little sandwiches. So like, I really associate giving blood with getting really delicious little sandwiches. So,
well, I'm glad it was good for you.
So that, but you know, I know the nurse always talks to you very calmly, you know, and they like, don't look at the needle, and they do this whole thing when, you know, when you're having blood taken. And that was kind of just Kira just being like, you know, that's her reaction to freaking out about something very human, is just, you know, she didn't even mean to. The electricity was just something that happened. I kind of really like that about it. It's just, it was involuntary fear.
Yeah.
Also, you know, she was being affected.
Yeah.
By the virus. Yeah. She didn't know that yet at that point, but she was already being affected. So that was just her powers were already kind of going, you know, wacky on her.
Yeah. I need to talk about the scene between Agent and Agent and Sheriff, basically, for a second, because I just found it ridiculous. I'm not in a bad way, but they're so, like, I don't know, I don't hate Agent McCall, but they're so, like, old school, like, I just see them, like, facing off at each other in, like an old school Wild West movie poster or something like that. I don't know, I just find it amusing. But also the woman that was in charge of the disease control, it's not named on the screen, but her name is Dr. Wentz. And you don't see a lot of Wentzes around, and we have a Wentz. Brooke, his last name is Wentz, so I promised that I would mention that, basically.
She was named after Brooke.
Yeah. Really?
Absolutely, she was named after Brooke.
Seriously?
Absolutely. Angela and I named her after Brooke. We did it. Angela and I named her after Brooke. She is named after Brooke. That is Brooke.
She will cry.
Brooke is running around in very fashionable high heels, solving all the world's health problems. So that's what she's doing.
That's nice. We'd all like characters now. Thanks very much.
Oh, I see. That's how it starts.
No, I'm joking.
You have one.
It's not
You're
me.
You're Miss Martin.
That's... Oh, yes, that rare and special name. No, I just liked the, basically, the interaction between Sheriff and McCall in that scene in terms of their kind of panic. And so, I mean, Agent McCall obviously is going to have a little bit more of a role later to play in this episode, but he's kind of, you know, vaguely this season, you know, trying really hard, being more sympathetic, but it's all a bit, I don't know, floppy, if that makes sense. Like, and yeah, I just more appreciated the doctor, the one in charge, being like, you two can just deal with each other. I don't even care. I have bigger problems than your emotions right now, which is beautiful, really. So yeah.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the way you have to do it. Unfortunately, everybody would have a lot of strong emotions about that. So she just has to take care of business. Yeah, she did a good job.
Yeah.
So going back to what you were saying before about the plot point with, I think it was Malia's claws coming back in, I assume that has to do with the vault, the secret entrance to the Hale family vault that they find in the basement.
I don't know if that actually had to do with the blood taking, but yeah, I mean, that was all, you know, that was definitely, yeah, her claws were very important with, you know, that was sort of wrapped up in them needing a Hale to open the vault.
Oh yeah, like that whole situation with them having not told her, and they were like, oh yeah, you do it, I don't have control for my claws. It was really like, oh god, like it's a bit, I don't know, I understand why they sort of haven't told her, but it was kind of very, you know, I think that we will obviously learn, you know, what once she finds out, you know, continuing on into her reaction about it. They did not handle that situation in the best way that they could have, basically.
No, they handled that in a very bad situation. I mean, that a very bad situation. They handled that situation in a very bad way. Like, you know, but that's a very human thing to do. You start telling a lie, and then you get caught up in that lie, and you think you're doing the right thing. You know, people lie to protect other people all the time, and most of the time it really just blows up in your face, and that's kind of what happened.
Yeah.
And that's what I was talking about before with, like, Stiles and Scott. They sort of balance each other out, and you could see Stiles feel so strongly about not telling Malia about Peter that he kind of brings Scott into it, and Scott at first has reservations, but at the same time he ends up helping Stiles keep that secret. So I think it's interesting just to, like, see their relationship sort of, you know, the dynamics there in regards to how they're dealing with the Malia situation.
Yeah, and I mean, because you get the sort of double bluff in this episode of her, you know, her knowing, like, she, you know, at first she's like, guys, what are you hiding from me? It's okay, I know I'm on the list. And they're like freaked out. Oh my god, she knows, if you know what I mean.
Right.
And then later you think she's seen the list, but she's actually blind, and then obviously does find out. But, I mean, what Stiles and Scott are saying, like, you know, what Stiles says, you know, about that, you know, if Malia finds out, you know, she'll go to Peter and he'll get into her head, like he's gotten into all of our heads. I mean, has Peter gotten into all of their heads? Like, if they're aware they don't trust Peter, then what's the situation there? And like, would Malia, like, would, you know, why would she want that? Like, my big question is, what's going on with her weird bear trap adopted dad? Does she still live with him? Like, is he, like, you know,
I knew that was gonna come up.
Like, is she, like, is she not happy with her family that raised her? That, like, if you know what I mean, like, the adoption situation.
They're dead. They're mostly all dead, so she's not super happy about that. No, Natalie.
No, but I mean, does she live with her bear trap weird dad?
I think she probably does, yeah. The weird bear trap dad, you know, that's an actor who has a contract and is maybe more expensive than the show can afford.
Yeah.
There's some inside baseball that I don't mind saying, because that's just the reality of TV.
No, that's fine.
However, yeah, no, I think she does, but, like, I think it's probably, like, if I think about her home life, I think she spends a lot of time over at the Stilinskys, first of all.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of things have come up between her and her dad. Maybe he's working longer hours at the office because he doesn't want to come home to her, you know, like staring at him, wondering, you know, why, you know, all of these things happened, and, you know, just like a lot of tension there.
Yeah.
But I, to answer something you said, or my opinion, actually, this is just more of an opinion about about the characters and the story is that I think Styles is right. Like, Peter, what he said to Scott about, you know, we've been letting him walk around like he's one of the good guys, and he's not one of the good guys. Like, Peter's not one of the good guys, and he never has been.
Yeah.
And sure, he's helped out a lot because that might help him. He is, if there's any nerds out there, and I know there are, you know, he would be like, he's like a lawful, is he lawful? He might be like a lawful evil character in D&D. He will do things to help your party, but it's only because he's seeing what he can get out of it in the end. And I think Styles sees that more than anybody else does. Like, I think Lydia sees it too, but I think Styles really is tapped into just how fucking evil Peter can be. And Scott is the kind of person that sees the good in everybody, right? So he, like, I think he maybe sees Peter as someone that could be reformed. And Styles is like, dude, you can't change people. You know, that's
at least not Peter.
Yeah. I was a murder slashing, you know, fox demon, but you can't change people.
but he wasn't him. He was possessed.
Yeah, yeah,
by that.
Yeah. That's all right. A little, I know. I'm joking. It's fine.
Don't joke about Styles.
Why?
Oh, I don't know. Because that's how the internet will react. Like... Yeah. You don't understand him.
We get in so much trouble. We're like, if you just stop making jokes about Derek, maybe you would understand his story better because you'd understand all the pain he's been through. I'm like, yeah, we get it.
Yeah, I think his pain is funny. Yeah. So that's why I make jokes about it.
Yeah. We joke about it because it's that, or just be like totally bummed out by the character. Yeah. So, yeah, it's fine.
That's why I'm not on Twitter, because saying something like that, then I'd hear about it. And I don't want to hear about it. I just want to go home and watch my own TV and leave me alone. All right. Sorry. Karen, you were probably trying to say something really insightful and interesting, and Natalie and I were just talking right over you. Sorry.
It wasn't really insightful, but I don't think I said this on when we talked about San Diego Comic-Con, but I actually met the guy who plays Mr. Tate, Todd Stashwick. He was at a booth selling like a comic book or some sort of book that he helped write, I think, with one of his friends. And another hypeable writer, Kristen, and I went up to him and were like, hey, we know you from Teen Wolf, hi. And he was just really nice, and that it really wasn't important, but there you go.
that's cool. It's good to hear. I didn't get to meet him, so I'm glad to hear that he was, you know, he seemed positive about Teen Wolf, I hope. I hope he had a good experience.
Yeah, no, he was like really, he liked it a lot, and he was like, yeah, I hear that I'm not actually her father, so like he wasn't sure what was going on, but...
Yeah, yeah, and I think who knows, that could be something that, you know, that could be a character. I'm not like Jeff, so when Jeff says this, like, people will go like, oh my god, they're going to bring him back. You know, that could be a character that comes back later someday. I mean,
I think that people would really like that. Like, I think that people would really like the whole, because there's been a few characters on the show that have been adopted and not particularly happy about it, if you know what I mean. Like, Jackson was really angsty since he found out that he was adopted, and I think that, you know, it might not be where the story ends up going, but people would really like to see, you know, and obviously Malia's story is pretty like, oh, cool, so my child, you know, I thought was dead for 8 years. This is really awkward. She ate my wife and other child. Like, this is bad. And, you know, it is not the ideal situation, but people would like to see, you know, I think in this day and age, adoption stories where the child, you know, does end up believing the adopted family is her real and most important family because they chose her and raised her, as opposed to someone just, you know, ditching them or whatever. Not that ditching her was Peter's choice, but who wants Peter as a dad?
Oh, absolutely. You know? Absolutely. I mean, if we're talking about a real world situation, I think family is what you make. I'm not, blood to me is not thicker than water. I don't care where you came from.
I think the whole pack situation is represented in that as well. You know, obviously that they have here in the found family of the actual pack, but I know people have talked specifically about the characters who are officially adopted, you know, and how they've been sort of angsty about that, and how, you know, sometimes adopted people are happier to be, you know, they don't want the whole birth family thing.
Absolutely, but I don't think that is Malia's case. I don't think she's unhappy about it, but she has such a tragic story that, you know, she killed, or maybe didn't kill, but caused the death of her, yeah, her mom and sister. And then she's supernatural. So finding out that Peter's her father, she would want to know. That's what Stiles is worried about. She's going to, yeah, want to know just based on the supernatural business. And the Hales have such a history. I mean, it's kind of like waking up and finding out that you're a Kennedy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you'd be like, oh, I love my family, but I would kind of like to know more about this.
Yeah.
You know, enough. You know, and there's still the story. There's still the question of who her mother is.
Yeah.
You know, like, so that's a, you could understand why she's going to be curious and why they'd be a little freaked out by that, because Peter is not someone you know, talk about not wanting to know your biological family. Like, he's not necessarily someone you want to, like, welcome with open arms. You have to be super careful about him. But just on the adoption thing, I mean, you know, Liam has a stepfather.
Yeah.
Who has a very good relationship with. That's a very positive relationship. Unfortunately, once again, it's sort of just more of a cast actor availability issue. Not that we don't want that character around more. It was just more of a actor availability issue. So hopefully schedules will open up and we can learn more about Liam's dad. Because I think that, you know, he seemed like a really good actor, and I really liked I like the possibility there. So
yeah.
So that's all I have to say about adoption.
Cool, deep.
Going back to the vault, Stiles clearly wants the Hale money. He says that it could solve a lot of problems, and he's definitely not wrong. My question is, you know, or just I guess something I want to throw out there is that he says that bearer bonds are really rare. So I'm kind of wondering if this is going to be a way that they're going to be able to track down the benefactor, since the benefactor had to change those bonds.
I was like that as well. I was like, into cash. Someone had to cash those in. If they're like, you know, do they not need any photo ID for that or anything? Like, no, it's just...
You don't. I mean, that's the thing about bearer bonds. What TV show was I just watching? It's very funny. Bearer bonds came up in another show. I was just watching it. I don't remember what it was, but... you don't. That's the thing about bearer bonds. Whoever bears them can just cash them in.
Okay. But
that's kind of why they are rare anymore. The government doesn't issue them anymore because they were mostly being used on the black market, being used by criminals. If they were stolen from you, you had no way to track your money. You know, there's no electronic account of it or anything. So, you know, the government likes to keep track of big money changes. One, they're shutting down your communication, Natalie, and giving everyone disease. They like to also track your money. So bearer bonds really are very rare. So I like to think that they've been sitting in that Hale vault for a very long time.
Yeah. Haven't they thought of a better way to kind of, like, I understand it's very convenient for someone to steal them and then use them for assassin money, but you'd think the Hales would have thought of a safer way to keep their money rather than just getting out a bearer bond every now and then, like, to cash in to get a new jacket or whatever.
I don't know. I just don't. Derek just doesn't seem like someone who has a financial advisor. I don't think he'd trust him. That's how I, you know, he seems like the type that might, like, stash his money in his mattress.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
He does move his bed around a lot, so maybe that's why.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, fair enough. Poor Derek. When are you going to function in society?
But, hey, speaking of terrible diseases that Natalie doesn't want to catch, we found out that everyone has weaponized canine distemper, which sounds horrible.
Yeah, distemper's
awful. But Satomi is immune because she always drinks tea, reishi tea, and I think that's amazing because I'm addicted to tea, so... hopefully that will save my life someday.
Yeah, I hope that for you as well.
I'm trying to think of a way where tea would save your life in a clever way. Like, if you were... Yeah, no, I can't. I've got nothing.
If you had weaponized canine distemper and you needed to be better, I don't know. But yeah, that whole situation between, you know, Satomi and Derek when they're kind of making that discovery is so... It was my favorite part of the whole episode. And yeah, I don't want to get mushy in front of Alyssa because she's a bitch, so she'll be mean to me about it.
Okay, I'd like to quote something I said in high school when someone called me that. No, Natalie, I'm not a bitch. I'm a serious bitch.
Okay. Yeah, well, okay. No, that's fine. I just think that she'll make fun of me because she finds pain hilarious.
That's true.
Yeah, so, but it was my favorite bit of was that sad little Derek bit with, well, not sad, but it was kind of peaceful and nice and their kind of, you know, banter about his mother. And it's always a bit, you know, can get a bit cliche if someone's, you remind me so much of your mother. Maybe we've been reading Harry Potter too long, but I really liked how it was done in this episode, and it was like, and just hearing a bit about his, like, normal life, I appreciated that a lot. And I think that, yeah, more of that always nice, because Derek is, you know, so sad and pathetic that I think that people like to see him having emotions that aren't just...
Yes. I think this scene broke a lot of people, and Brooke was like, when can Satomi adopt Derek? And I think that's an excellent idea.
Derek is like the cowboy, though. Derek is like, he doesn't have parents. You know, you never knew Clint Eastwood's parents in The Good, the Bad, the Ugly. You know, he just, he doesn't have parents. He does, like, we've seen the remembrance of them and things, but he can't. He's the cowboy. That's just the way that works. But I do, it was a lovely scene. They didn't, it was a lovely scene. It's not the one that made me all teary-eyed. None of them made me teary-eyed, by the way, because I don't have tears.
No, I didn't cry or anything. I've cried in other episodes. I didn't cry in this. But it was... I just like seeing him have, like, normal feelings. Because it's just... I don't know. Partial, you know, awe and partial hilarity. Like, I like seeing him emote and react to things. I find it really funny. So, yeah.
Well, I thought that was really good, too. I would like to mention, though, that I would like to thank... Speaking of canine distemper, because I do a lot of animal rescue, and distemper is really awful. And we were rescued a puppy from a couple of people a couple years ago who had distemper and passed away, because most puppies with distemper do, had horrible neurological
issues. The people or the dog?
No, the dog passed away. I don't care what happened to the people, because they sucked.
Okay.
But the puppy, unfortunately, passed away, and it was awful. Which brings me to the animal rescue thing, which brings me to saying I'd like to say thank you very much to the Steric campaign for raising all that money to save wolves, which I think is badass on a TV show that I helped create that would inspire people to help save animals. That makes me very, very happy. So
that's
good job, you guys. That fucking rocks, and I really, really appreciate it. And it looks like one of the wolves is named Badger, which is also really super awesome. But yeah, like I really, that is what makes moves me, Natalie. See,
yeah.
I'm moved by that.
By things. You can have feelings. Maybe we can watch Alyssa emote at things and then laugh. How will that feel if the tables are turned?
Well, you can laugh, but you'll just start crying because it'll be so amazing. You'd be like, wow, I really do feel that.
Yeah.
And then the wolves would come rip your throat out, Natalie. That's what would happen. Because they're my buddies.
Oh, God. All right. Well, hopefully that doesn't happen. But distemper is bad. Saving the canine friends is good.
There you go.
Yeah, I did have a slight laugh at, like, oh, lol, they have a dog disease, because I like the slight references they have, you know, throughout the show. Right back, I think, in season 2, with Scott being able to sense Erica having epilepsy, I'm like, that's a dog thing! They have dogs that do that! And I was like, it's like a heightened dog sense, and I got really excited, so, yeah.
Oh, I thought you meant they have dogs that have epilepsy. I was like, yeah, my roommate had a dog that...
No, they have dogs that can sense, I mean, maybe they do, but they have dogs that can sense, like, when someone's about to have an epileptic fit, in the same way that, you know, Scott did with Erica, and I was just like, all of these weird biological dog enhancements are amusing to me with the werewolves.
There you go.
So we got that nice scene, and then, of course, as Teen Wolf usually does, turns the table on us, and we see the chemist show up with a gun holds it to Styles' head and basically says, tell me where your friends are or I'm going to kill you. And Styles refuses to tell him, which was amazing, but also kind of traumatic to see. And Agent McCall ends up coming in and shooting the chemist in the head. And Styles gets this splatter of blood across his face, and it was horrific.
Yeah.
Horrifying. It was good, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was really like, wow, okay, that escalated quickly, basically. I mean, yes, if you're a cop and you see someone else holding a gun at a kid, apparently you can do that. I don't know, maybe you can't do that. Maybe that will have consequences. I don't know. But yeah, I was a bit like, oh, okay, that's the saves the day person. All right, okay, fair enough. Off we go. Any explanation to why the non-supernatural people started getting better? Is it just it wasn't actually that dangerous to them in the first place? Was there actually a cure? Like,
no, I mean, that's actually, it was like, you know, think of it as like a timed response. Like he needed to make everyone go down, right? Yeah. But he had no intention of killing non-supernaturals. It would wear off. And I feel like the coach probably took a long time to wear off because he got a high dosage of it.
He was like patient zero. I was terrified for him. I was like really afraid he was going to die. And if he did, I would have cried a lot, especially now that we have just like little tidbits of his backstory. I feel really connected to Coach.
Yeah.
I love Coach. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a nice little dash of complete surreal weirdness on the show that I love.
Complete surreal weirdness among, yeah, you know, all of these supernatural beings.
Right.
But yeah, Agent McCall sort of coming in and doing that, you know, was he really the best person to be translating that message to Styles, like, you know, that he didn't know anything about? I mean, I understand that it was nice that it was him, who's a character that we maybe don't care as much about, than, you know, oh my god, no, Sheriff has shot someone in the head, we're worried about what will happen to him, did he get the disease? Oh no. But, right. You know, Agent McCall, like, how is there any chance that he's going to be finding out more about what's going on?
I mean, there's always a chance that people, you know, you hang out in Beacon Hills very long and, you know, it starts to eventually add up unless you're really bad at math, I think. So,
yeah,
I'd definitely say there's a chance.
By the way, skipping back quickly, that autopsy scene.
Oh, man. That was pretty gross, actually.
That was awesome.
That was so gross. Jeff needs to stop watching Hannibal.
He loves Hannibal.
I can tell so much. Like, it's... Oh, I mean, I know he does anyway, but, like, I can see... Not necessarily direct influences, but, oh, it's so graphic, some of the stuff that you guys have had recently. It's so gross.
Thank you.
Anyway, I just wanted to mention how horrible that was.
Thank you for saying that. You were always very kind to me. Thank you.
I love telling you how horrible the things you do are. It makes you feel a great sense of achievement.
It really does.
But yeah, I don't know. Like, was there a particular reason that they were not meant to get the adults sick? Like, that just because all of the supernaturals happened to be teens? Or was it just... was it worse for adults or something like that? Like, with the chemist, they made a point that, like, no adults got sick except Coach. And then he was like, oh, that's how he got it, when he saw Coach been using the ink pad. Anything behind that?
Yeah, I mean, that starts to get into the science that doesn't really exist and things in that whole situation. But no, I think his intention was to go after, you know, teenage supernaturals. And,
yeah.
But maybe it's amount of dosage. Maybe it's the teenage body. You know, there are certain diseases that hit younger people more than older people.
Yeah.
Just based on immunity, oftentimes younger people survive things. But, you know, like the last flu bout we had was actually going after healthier people.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's maybe a situation like that. And, you know, that Coach was exposed. You know, I feel like Coach was probably playing with that ink pad. You know how you can, like, take your thumb and make butts with it? Have you ever done that? If you haven't, it's
Coach
fun.
Would totally do that.
Wouldn't Coach do that? Yeah. So like, I feel like Coach is probably in the office with that ink pad. You know, he had to open. He probably got the PSAT stuff early and opened it up, right? Because he ran out of ink to do his job, and that seems like something Coach would do. And then I feel like he was probably making some ink butts, and he got really overexposed to that virus.
My God. Please.
It's amazing.
Yeah, fair enough. Because for a long time, I was trying to puzzle out through the episode when they were talking, because they talked earlier about, you know, viruses that had been extinct and, you know, all of, you know, that we've only eliminated two viruses, etc. Nothing's, I was like, is this something that, like, all of the adults have been vaccinated for, but that the kids don't get that vaccine anymore? Are you making some commentary about the vaccine, like overdramatics or something, like, or just in general that it was a vaccine that they don't do anymore because people have been, you know?
Well, that's true about smallpox.
Yeah,
actually,
you don't get a smallpox vaccine anymore.
No, past a certain age. So I mean, it could be. Actually, we did talk about that in the room. You know, if this was a smallpox variant, which was a canine distemper variant type of thing, which are, I think are vaguely immunologically related, though I would have to talk to someone who knows a lot more about that than I do. Which I'd love to, because I really like science. And if we were making a statement about vaccines, we would fall down directly on people should be vaccinated. Yeah. But if we were doing that. But yeah, no, I mean, we did talk about how, you know, at past a certain age, you are not vaccinated against smallpox anymore. I mean, that's, and those people who are vaccinated, it might have worn off at this point anyhow. So
yeah,
we'd all be totally fucked. But yeah, no, I mean, you know, look, we don't have a lot of time to explore the science of that stuff, and it gets a little wonky if we do, because science doesn't really work this way. You know, it takes a long time, and you know, it's a very slow process, and I find it fascinating, but we don't really have time to explore that on Teen Wolf as much.
Yeah. What do you think Styles...
But I do recommend watching Cosmos. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Okay. What do you think Styles thinks of McCall shooting someone in the head on his behalf?
I think he's pretty glad to be alive. I think McCall was justified. He was at three. He was going to pull that trigger.
Yeah.
He didn't have time to tell him to drop the weapon. McCall is trained to, that's his training in the FBI, is to come in and assess a situation and do whatever is necessary to protect the innocent.
Yeah.
And Styles is definitely the innocent. And, you know, I mean, I think it's kind of ironic that a character, you know, Styles and him have not had Styles has been very protective of Scott and they've not had a great relationship. And then McCall saves his life. I mean, you know, that probably changes your opinion about somebody.
Yeah. Well,
I can't even imagine what Styles was going through at the end of the episode either, because, like, he has this other guy's blood and probably brain matter splashed across his face, and then he runs downstairs to try to save his best friend, and when he couldn't get into the room, that was horrifying, and then finally the door opens and we see that Scott's okay, and just the way that they look at each other like, oh my God, you know, it was obviously, you know, Styles.
If we were at FightCon, someone would be shouting, "Now kiss."
yes, that was definitely a thing.
But yeah, it was like raw panic, like when he couldn't get that door open.
Yes.
Like, yeah. A little bit about Scott there as well. Were we meant to kind of being implied that's the same thing that ended up happening with Deucalion, that like, even though he was getting blinded, he could see in his werewolf eyes? Is that what happened? Or was Scott not at that level of illness yet and he could just still see in general?
No, he was only using his... that was definitely mine.
Yeah.
So I can talk about that. No, he was using his... It occurs to him in his smart alpha brain to, you know, try his powers. I mean, he wasn't able to really control his powers that much, so he had to really, really concentrate with all of his alphaness and be able to turn on his wolf vision, and you know, it worked. Like, that's what Deucalion was able to do, and Scott was able to do it as well. Yeah, no, that's definitely intentional. Like, that was that's how he saved himself and his pack, was by being a badass alpha and being smart about it, for sure. And Natalie, I have to go back, all the things that you just said, the only thing, I really feel like we totally blew it. We should have had more brain matter on Styles' face. I feel like that was really a missed opportunity, Karen, and now I'm really sad about that.
I'm sorry.
There'll always be more chances for brain matter.
Thanks, Natalie.
I promise you, you'll get there. Don't worry. It reminds me of, I just saw a censoring thing speaking of Hannibal about Hannibal the other day that was just something about the, I don't know who it is that controls these things, but basically they got told that a shot that they had of basically these two, one of their like death tableaus, one of their like scenes of the corpses, is these two people who have had their backs skinned and pulled up in the form of angel wings praying over this bed. And there's this two naked dead couple basically made into these meat angels. And they were like, oh, yeah, you can't show that shot because you can see their butt cracks.
Oh,
and
my God.
Brian Fuller was like, it was either Brian Fuller or the director of the episode was like, oh, what if we fill their butt cracks with blood so you can't tell it's a butt crack? They were like, yeah, that's fine. That's cool. Like, it's one of the grossest things I've ever seen, like butt cracks or no. But like, I just love that that's where the censoring is. So I think more brain matter will probably work out for you one day.
Welcome to America.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It was
oh
so
my God.
Bad.
That's incredible. That's incredible. That's all. That's. Yeah, well, butt cracks are super gross. So, yeah. I mean, when they get all sweaty and like, ugh, that's the worst.
Anyway, moving on to the end of the episode. Basically, what happens is Malia sees her name on the Deadpool list. And that moment when she sort of pushes Styles' hand off of her shoulder and walks away kind of broke my heart. It was really, really sad to see that. And I can't blame her. I mean, that's a horrible thing to keep from somebody, but I also understand why Styles didn't want to tell her either. And there's really, like, no easy solution to that issue, you know?
Yeah.
It's complicated, and they did a great job. Dylan and Shelley did a fantastic job. And, I mean, I know some people still hate on Malia, but don't hate on Shelley, because that girl is bringing it. She is...
Yeah. Her delivery is always so good of everything, and just her, yeah, her sort of portrayal of that character is, I don't know, I really like it. And this is something that people sort of go back and forth on, you know, the same issue. Some people love it, some people don't like it, which is that Styles and Malia's relationship together, you know, we don't really know what they define themselves as. You know, we haven't had, you know, Sheriff being like, this is my son's little girlfriend, Malia, or anything, but, you know, they're together, but their dynamic with each other is like it's not like awkward like a lot of the, you know, couples on the show. It's not like, ooh, I'm awkwardly dating. They have a dynamic that feels like they've been a couple that's been together for like 20 years or whatever. Like they seem really like sort of settled and close without it being defined. And some people really like that and some people don't like it because they're like, but where was the growth? How has this occurred? But, yeah, I mean, what are you kind of writing, like, Styles and Malia together as a relationship? Like, is that sort of approached differently to any of the other couples? Like, is there any sort of insight you can say about, like, you know, the way they relate to each other?
You mean, is there anything I can say that won't piss off a whole bunch of people?
I don't care if it pisses off
mad at me.
People. Like,
I
care about if you're, you know, saying things that will get you in trouble or the show in trouble or spoilers. But pissing off people, they can suck it. I don't care.
You know, I don't actually care if I piss them off either. I just know I will anytime I say anything
That's
about
fine.
Styles and anybody.
We're very pro Styles and Malia, so people probably don't like us either. So that's
Look, I'm pro any relationship that's interesting, frankly.
Yeah.
And we do talk about that. No, absolutely. Like, Jeff is insistent. I mean, we talk about these characters a lot. I mean, really a lot. A lot doesn't even... I mean, every episode and every scene, we talk about their wants and needs. We talk about what makes them tick. We talk about what they're feeling. And I, you know, you said it when you were describing it. You said their relationship feels different. Well, it should feel different. If we have relationships that feel the same, then we are doing a bad job. Some people would say we're doing a bad job anyhow. Whatever. That might be true sometimes, but it's a difficult job in that trying to make everyone unique and trying to really feel like, what am I trying to say? Like, you know, to make them feel authentic in a way that when you're dealing with something that's in an authentic world, you know, it's the supernatural. Yeah. Like Malia and Stiles got together when they were both at their darkest points, yeah, basically. So it would kind of like be a relationship in the trenches of World War One.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, like that. Yeah, and it's just like they don't have time for no bullshit, basically. Like
exactly.
And as opposed to like there's no awkward like, oh, do you want to go out on a date with me kind of thing? Oh, do we like each other? It's like we know this is on. You know, it doesn't have any of the performance aspect of it. Like, it's just, it seems like, yeah, one of those things that's sort of deeper, more fast, which isn't to kind of belittle the other relationships, but it doesn't seem normal. And I think that comparison that you said is pretty good. And I mean, it's something we've talked about a lot of relationships, like about whether, you know, Parrish and Lydia would potentially become a thing or anything like that, about how that would be very much, you know, same deal in the circumstance of, like, you know, something formed in the trenches or whatever. But, yeah, I think that's a pretty decent way of putting it, because it does seem, yeah, it just seems like people, they seem a lot more sort of, not adult in their ways they act with each other, but, yeah, it's just, it doesn't have any of that performative element of, quote-unquote, dating in the way that, you know, Americans especially really like to show on television. Our dating culture here is very different, so it's all confusing to me. But yeah,
I lived in Australia when I was 21. I totally understand you're dating, and I'm using quotes there.
Yeah,
badly,
we don't culture. Do that, like not in that way. But yeah, it's just they just, as I said, yeah, feel different, and we always try to narrow down why. But yeah, it does just feel like, yeah, more of a kind of not all or nothing situation, but it kind of feels like they're that couple that's already more kind of advanced in their relationship than the ones around them, that they're sort of actually more grounded, because no matter what's going on around them, you know, they're just going off their base feelings or whatever, as opposed to, you know, anxieties or, oh, you know, slow progress. I don't know, normal quote-unquote dating.
No, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was a different style of relationship, and you know, some people aren't into that. That's cool, but yeah. I like it. I like the way it's progressed this season.
Yeah.
A lot, and I think that we have, you know, two actors who are really pulling it off in a really incredible way. I mean, it's kind of like Scott and Kira. They're like a little bit cuter and awkward, and those two actors are fantastic at doing that, and it gives us, it's nice actually, because you know, Scott and Allison were so deep, and
yeah,
they were great, and even in their breakup they were deep, and it's nice to see Scott have something that's a little, he gets to be the little sweeter, cuter, you
yeah.
know, and Stiles and Lee are still, actually they're both very funny like both of those actors have a lot of great comic timing, but they still have a real, you know, I like the sort of the desperation, in a way, of their relationship. Maybe that's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah,
you know.
I think that it works.
And now I will get death threats, so thank you very much, Natalie.
Hey! Hey! I asked you if you wanted to come and sit through. You see, you could have said no. Karen, before we go into the feedback quickly and finish up, we are almost finished.
Yeah, because, you know, I have a, you know, a
job.
Episode I need to finish.
Yeah. Is there anything that you would like to ask Alyssa, Karen, that's like sort of something you want to clear up from the season so far? I have a couple of things. I don't know if you're able to tell them or not, but Karen, is there anything you can think of that you wanted to kind of ask?
Not off the top of my head.
Okay, here's mine. In the last couple of episodes, we've seen some various assassins, like the Orphans and the Mute and stuff like that. And I mean, you were obviously, you wrote Muted, so you got to have him, and you got to have, you know, even Liam turning into a werewolf. That was sort of you, you know, obviously you got to write that episode. But, okay, in the episode last week where the Orphans got killed, I think one of the other random assassins is all like, he was like, oh, they look like kids. They're posing as kids. And then the Mute is obviously not normal. He has no mouth. It doesn't look like it has, you know, normal in any way. And he feeds himself from a tube. So are these people, you know, what are they? Are they human? Are they some demi-supernaturals that don't count well enough to be on the list? Like, what?
They're human. I feel comfortable in saying that.
How is the mute human?
Yeah, I don't know.
just a birth defect, hey, Jeff? Or some weird science experiment.
He's human, but, you know, he could have, yeah, exactly. Maybe he was operated on or had some really weird fetish. I remember saying that to Jeff. I'm like, if you're born without a mouth, they give you one. But Jeff was like, no, it'd be super cool. And I'm like, it is pretty cool. So, but no, they, whatever his backstory might be, they're human. They are human assassins.
Okay.
Might there be non-human assassins out there? Sure. But these, so far, we have seen very human. And the orphans, I don't know if we ever said, but even, I don't know if we ever said their ages, but even, Agent McCall knew that they were older. They were not high schoolers.
Yeah. So they were just some older people who were posing as high schoolers. They weren't some weird immortal children or something.
No, it was like the 21 Jump Street of assassins.
Fair enough. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. I mean, is there anything, Alyssa, in terms of your creation of this episode or things so far that you would kind of want to point out or want to clear up or anything like that?
I mean, I'm sure there's stuff when I'm like, I don't even know if it's stuff we would talk about, but of course there's always something where I'm like, okay, well, that could have been done better. But I think we're always super critical of each other, of ourselves and our show. We're all perfectionists and we don't have time to make perfection. And, you know, art is never finished. It's abandoned. So, yeah. But I think this episode turned out great. I usually give Tim, the director, a hard time, but I have to say he did a fan-fucking-tastic job. And Kim, so there's Tim and Kim.
Yeah.
Kim is the editor on this episode. That team also did 403. So it was, we were kind of a team going through. She also did an amazing job. And I think Laura Webb, our music supervisor, did a fantastic job. And the music and Dino, of course. I just think the whole episode really came together. Oh, and can I give a shout out to our... Okay.
Yes.
I was going to anyhow. To Rusty and the art department.
Yeah.
For the, when we wrote the little, when I remember sitting at home writing, the chemist's little lab, it did not look like that in my head. And I came on set and it's so much better. Like I imagined him being in kind of little space and it was this impressive, whole plastic, cool lab that was really, really well done. And there was all kinds of cool colors.
You have to make that set up just for one use. It's not like you get to, a permanent set that you're putting effort into having lots of scenes in. I mean, unless we will. But, having those one-off sets.
No, that was definitely a one-off set. And it was it was right outside the hospital. You guys have been here.
Yeah.
So it was right outside the hospital. And it just was fantastic. I mean, the CDC, I was a little worried. We do not have the biggest budget on television.
Yeah.
And, I was worried what it would look like in the high school, and it looked amazing. And Kat does our props, and her and her department getting just last minute, of course, because we never have these scripts done in time, and I feel bad for them, just pulling all those amazing props and making it look really as realistic as TV gets, at least on MTV. It looked fantastic. And so that's what I'd like to say is just everyone did a fantastic job. I think they've been knocking it out of the park this season altogether. And I'm really excited for, I've just been seeing the work done on the episodes coming up and from the acting to the set design, to the costumes, to the hair, to, the music, to the editing, to the directing, everything is just coming together. I'm very, very pleased about it.
Yeah, I believe one of our girls who's a parish...
And the podcasting, sorry.
Oh, yeah, the podcasting. Obviously, this has made this so much better. I think one of our girls had a bit of a suspicion about parish not being around in terms of, a disease that affects supernatural creatures, better get out of town. Is that, something we should be suspicious of? Or, is it just not everyone is in every episode? Liam wasn't around this episode either and stuff.
Parrish is not a coward, I will say that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So no, he did not just disappear. He just was like, maybe he was saving a cat that was in a tree. You know, he has other things to do.
Yeah.
Paris should totally do that.
Maybe Liam got stuck in a tree and he had to go see Liam.
Oh, God. I want a picture of that now, too.
Yeah, there we go. There's some new fan fiction for you.
Okay. I guess a couple of other questions that I had. Okay, so at the beginning of the episode, the chemist in your beautiful lab was experimenting on some random dude who's, you know, a werewolf. Is that werewolf someone who was on the list, or is that just some random that he was experimenting on?
Oh, you know what? I know that I should have a real answer for that, and I don't remember. I don't remember if we decided on that. I'd have to look at our list and see who's crossed out and tell you. I can't recall if we gave that character a name or not. I think we talked about it. I think we did actually, like, we had the Deadpool list on our wall. And I think I remember Ian standing up and pointing at somebody.
Yeah.
But I wish I had a really good answer to that question, but I can't remember who it was.
I mean, I was just curious as to whether the benefactor is going after literally every, you know, supernatural creature in whatever Beacon Hills, Beacon County, or if he has got a select few, if you know what I mean. If it's the selected, you know, it's just Satomi's pack, you know, that family of Wendigos, Scott's pack and stuff like that. Or whether it's everyone that he can think of or everyone that he can find out about.
I think he's going after Supernaturals.
Yeah. Everyone? Yeah. Okay.
They may not be on that list, but I think he's going after everybody.
Interesting. Does that mean there's more lists?
No. There's not more lists. Good Lord. If we had a list every week, that would be boring.
Yeah, I suppose so. Okay, my final question, I guess, about this episode, before we just do some feedback here, was I've seen quite a few people talking about this episode, and I don't know who was on the Tumblr last night, like from the MTV Teen Wolf Tumblr, if it was like the regular team there or if anyone was on there as a guest. But people were saying that this was their kind of favourite episode of the season, which yay for that, I suppose, and that it was like a big game changer in terms of the events of Teen Wolf. Did you feel that way? Like, what did you feel there was any aspects that are really a sort of can't go back from this, like, big change in this episode?
I mean, it seems like every episode seems like it should be a big game changer. You know what I mean? Something tragic happens. I mean, it is one of my favorite episodes. I know my name's on it, so that sounds really full of myself, but I really feel like it didn't have as much to do with that. It was just as everybody else did. It was just really came together in a fantastic way.
Yeah.
So, but there's some episodes coming up that I also adore. So I don't know if I can name a favorite episode so far until I see the whole season. I mean, you know, I think it's a big deal that Malia found out who she was. That's a for sure game changer. I mean, Agent Call shooting somebody, that's probably, you know, that's something that's very serious taken in a law enforcement person's career. But I don't know about affecting the world of Teen Wolf. I don't know. I mean, to me, it was a little more of a bottle episode. I mean, it still moved our story along for sure. But I liked it a little bit because it did feel so, when you do a bottle episode like that, when you're, everything is so, immediate and enclosed, and it wraps it up a little bit more. Like, the story wrapped up, even though it moved our big story, it still had its own story within it.
Yeah.
That, you know, we had a resolution and things. And so I don't know if it's as big of a game changer as maybe, like, earlier in the season, like, when, like, Liam turned into a, like, finding the Deadpool, finding out what the names who had locked the Deadpool, finding out that, you know, Liam was bit by Scott. Those, to me, are bigger game changers, so. Yeah, but yeah. I mean, maybe they have insights that I'm not really...
I don't know. I don't know who it was that was saying that. I don't know.
I mean, they very well... They have a different opinion about that. It's probably just as valid, so, you know.
Karen, did you want to do the feedback bit?
Yeah. For our feedback, this is a question somebody asked us on Tumblr, and they just want to know that... they say that some people say Derek jumped in front of Satomi and took the bullet, also pointing out that he seems to be injured in the next episode. Some people say he jumped out of the way because he knew he could not survive a bullet as an almost human. So what happened, and did he get hurt? She doesn't remember seeing him getting shot or being injured afterwards. And, you know, I guess we could throw that to you, Alyssa, but my opinion on that was that he did just jump out of the way just because Satomi just kind of stood there after he did that and then went, like, full-on badass towards the assassin.
Oh, I think Derek was being a hero. He didn't jump out of the way. He was trying to protect Satomi because he's a hero.
But she they managed to miss. Yeah.
Yeah. They didn't miss. They did not miss.
So he is hit.
Yeah, he's hit. So yeah, no, they did not miss. And Satomi obviously didn't need his help because she turned out to be very capable. But you know, still like that was a very heroic thing to try to do.
Yeah.
But it will have consequences because of his, you know, losses, losing his powers. So it's definitely going to have some consequences.
Do we have anything else we want to say before your non sequitur, Karen?
I think that's it. My question this week actually is definitely for you, Alyssa. I don't know if you can answer this, Natalie, if it applies to you, but I wanted to know, what was the first creative project that you ever finished? And what I mean by that is, whether it was writing or if it was something else, like the first time that I finished a novel, it was a really terrible novel, but I was so proud to have finished it. And it was about like a werewolf, not a werewolf, but like Native American shapeshifters and like a wolf and a cat falling in love. And it was just terrible. But that sense of accomplishment was so great that it didn't matter. And I wonder if you had a story like that.
What do you mean? That sounds awesome. I don't know why you're saying it's
so terrible. Thank you. No, it's really bad. But
I mean, the first thing I ever finished was I wrote a story about Tommy Tooth getting cleaned when I was like in first grade. I still have that. There was Tommy Tooth, and what was the bad tooth's name? Tommy was the good tooth because he was my best friend, lived across the street. But I don't really feel like that was that emotionally satisfying, though I think my mom really liked it, so I probably was like, yeah, I'm awesome. You know, I'm actually a pretty good finisher. I like to finish my creative projects for better or for worse, mind you. Sometimes I think they should be abandoned. So I'd have to think about that a little bit, Karen, truthfully. Yeah, I don't know. I remember finishing, when I first moved to LA, I just moved kind of quickly. I sort of just made the decision and moved. And for the first month I was sort of living with my my boyfriend before. I didn't want to live with him permanently at that time just because they lived in a really crappy place and he had a roommate, and that just wasn't really where I wanted to be in my life. So I was looking for a place to rent cheaply, and I forced myself to write a script called Bouquet of Blood, based on a Halloween costume that we wore to an ILM Halloween party. And we were dressed as a bride and groom that had been killed in a car accident right after their wedding. Because, you know, those are the kind of happy things that I deal in. And so I decided to write a horror movie based on that. And I forced myself. It was not the best time in my life, and I forced myself to sit in this crappy, hot apartment in North Hollywood, and I had to sit in front of the computer for 4 hours a day. And I told myself I wasn't allowed to read the internet. I wasn't allowed to play any video games. I just had to sit there, and I could write or I didn't have to write, but I had to sit there. And I think I was a competitive swimmer for years, so I think some of my like swimming back and forth discipline actually helped with this. So I chose to write because it's really boring to just sit in front of a computer and not do anything. And when I finished that script, and it's maybe not as good as the shapeshifter cat falling in love with the wolf. but I tell you what, I felt pretty good about that because it was something that I, you know, it was hard to finish it. And it was really my first, I think it was my first script, movie script I'd ever really written. And so that was actually that felt pretty darn good to do that. I think that it's, as I said, it's not an amazing story. I think it has a couple funny jokes, at least I think are funny, but Bouquet of Blood probably will never see the big screen.
Shame.
Yeah, I know, the world is really,
I would watch it,
missing out.
You would, Karen.
It's better than some other bad horror movies I've worked on. Nothing is better than Sharknado.
Are you sure?
I met Ian, why am I blanking? Steve from 90210 at Comic-Con. It was awesome. He was at the Teen Wolf booth, and it was awesome. And he was there, he was at the Teen Wolf booth because he's awesome, but he was there at Comic-Con doing Sharknado too. Did you see Sharknado before you're bagging on it?
What do you think? Do you really think I've watched Sharknado?
Okay, so you didn't see, like, sharks coming out of, like, drains in Beverly Hills, and you don't know that that's art. So, Natalie, I don't want you judging. Quit being so judgy.
Karen, what was that movie you tried to make me watch?
Which one? I've tried to make you watch a couple of terrible ones. Was it Tremors?
Yeah.
Tremors.
Oh, holy fucking shit. You take that back. Tremors is not a terrible movie. Tremors is actually a fantastic horror film.
Thank you. I am in love with you right now because that is one of my all-time favorite movies. You are so awesome.
That's actually a really, really well done film.
It's so good.
Natalie, would you see Tremors? Are you also scared of giant sandworms?
I don't want to watch Tremors.
It's fantastic.
It's so good. Come on. If they turn into things called ass blasters, like, it's so awesome.
I don't like things that are funny.
You don't like things. You don't like things that they're. You don't like joy. That's what it is. Yeah. Obviously, Natalie just does not like joy, Karen.
Sorry,
you and I,
Karen.
Yes. Tremors is a fantastic film.
All right.
Thank you.
Fine.
One of Kevin Bacon's best.
Yes, definitely.
Okay. Fine.
Did I answer your question or did I just blather on for a long time?
No, that was perfect. Yeah. I think that's amazing too, forcing yourself to sit down for 4 hours straight a day, because that's hard. That's really hard. And I haven't been doing as much fiction writing as I used to, but I used to have a routine too, and it's really hard to be like, okay, I need to be creative now, when sometimes you don't feel like it. So I think even if it isn't the best thing, you know, just like my first novel that I finished, even if it's not the best thing ever written, it's something that you finished. And I think, you know, you can't take anything away from that. So, yeah, I think that's great.
I think finishing is actually one of the creative people's hardest. I think that's one of the biggest things to overcome, because it's never good enough. And
right. So
you just want to abandon it. And I get it. And I just have made myself, I do think 18 years of swimming back and forth in a pool had the only good thing I got out of that maybe was just a Catholic priest sense of self-discipline sometimes, you know, sort of why can't I think of the word? It seems like a word I would know. Well, would you flagellate? Yeah, flagellate yourself. It's kind of like writing is for me sometimes, you know, just having something done. And then if you go back and you rewrite and then you make it better. But just being able to know that you've done it feels really good. And that's kind of the cool here. That's kind of why I love working in TV. Movies are awesome. I love movies. I love watching movies. But working in TV, sometimes you can work on a movie and it never sees the light of day, or it takes years. TV, holy crap. You know, you write it, you film it, you put it on air. And that's why sometimes there's mistakes. And that's why sometimes it's not as good as we maybe want it to be. But it's still, there's a sense of like, that was awesome. I still remember even, you know, making that. And that's a pretty cool feeling. It's a pretty cool job. So when I'm feeling sorry for myself in a few hours because I took my 2.5 hours to do this, and I'm here till 2 a.m., I'm going to just tell myself, this is a really, really cool job. I'm so tired. But it is. But I'll blame you, Natalie.
Okay. Just me.
Karen's, I love that she blames you, not me.
Well, Karen, you obviously have really good taste in Tremors. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's true.
Karen, I've never written anything. Well, I wrote a Glee fan fiction once. That was all. The end.
That's all.
No, in answer to your non sequitur question, I'm not creative. The most creative thing I do is making this podcast, and that's not very creative. So, yeah.
But it feels really good when you finish editing a 2.5 hour podcast.
It does feel good at finishing editing, yes. And like, when I used to write really long recaps for Hyperbole, I hated the process of doing it. I mean, I didn't, but I did. The writing, I hated, but finishing was real good. And then being happy with what I'd written was real good. But the actual process, it wasn't like I was like, this is fun. I was like, oh, this is hell. And then this is like 4,000 word recaps every week for a television show I barely like.
You kind of know how we feel in the Teen Wolf writer's room.
Yeah.
No, except for the barely like part. But yeah, no, Jeff talks about that all the time. We talk about how writing is hell.
Yeah.
And it really can be sometimes. But man, when it's done and you get to see it and it's pretty fucking cool when you get to see all that happening and the music gets put in and Yeah. It's pretty good. It's pretty fun.
Yay. Well, that is about all, I think, in that case, unless there's anything else you want to make known to the world.
Yeah, no, I think I've shared enough fucking wisdom with the world. I really feel like I've changed everything for the better at this point.
Yeah,
so.
I think so, especially for the people who hate Malia. I'm sure they'll be very happy. But yeah. God, we're so awful. Anyway, yeah, Karen, do you want to sort of see us out? What's happening next week?
Next week, we have Teen Wolf Season 4, Episode 8, called Time of Death, which sounds terrifying. Yeah, so that will air on August 11th. And Scott attempts a dangerous plan to draw the benefactor, and Malia confronts her past. So I think this sounds like a pretty big episode, all in all, and I'm really excited about it.
It's a good one.
Yeah? Oh, I'm worried now.
No, it's a good one. Like,
fun?
Yeah, it's absolutely. It's a lot of fun.
Okay, cool. Derek's going to die, everyone, just so you know.
Actually, Derek does have a good... Derek has a storyline I feel very close to that storyline. So.
Okay. Cool.
And you know how much I like killing people. That's all I'm saying.
Shut up. Now we're going to get in trouble. We are going to get in trouble. All right. No, seriously. All right. This is enough. Okay. We'll go now and we'll say thanks very much to Alyssa for taking time out from actually working on the show to come and talk to us, which is clearly more important, but you know.
What I'm really worried about is I think they might have ordered dinner without me. So.
Oh no, that's not on. You need to go and check that. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, thank you very much. And we will say bye to you and hopefully be in touch again if there's anything we want to yell at you about or anything like that.
Fantastic.
So, yay.
And remember, yell at Ian on Twitter. And
IanStokes82, any complaints? Yeah. So everyone will say bye to their computers or whatever. So bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Hang on 1 second. Sorry, I'm going to cough. I have at the end of the cold. Sorry.
Are you sure it's just a cold, Natalie?
Fuck you.
Oh, my God.
Seriously? Fuck your show and everything that you stand for. okay. All right. No.